The Oro Valley Town Council regular session, April 19th, 2023, is called to order. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have 7 of 7 council members present. I move to go into executive session with the interim town manager, town attorney, legal services director, attorney from Humphrey and Peterson, PC, representing the municipal risk pool, and the town clerk.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go into executive session. The regular session is called to order. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Nicholson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. We have all 7 members of council present this evening. Mr. Standish, item 1.
Approval of any direction to the town attorney and or necessary staff as discussed in executive session pertaining to Joplin v. Town of Oro Valley.
I'll entertain a motion. Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Mayor, I move to proceed as directed.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay.
Nay.
The ayes have it, 6-1. Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance. Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The April 20th Stormwater Utility Commission meeting has been canceled, and also the April 25th Board of Adjustment meeting has been canceled. The Planning and Zoning Commission will hold their next meeting on May 2nd at 6 p.m. here in the council chambers, and then on May 3rd at 6 p.m., the town council will hold a regular session followed by a study session here in the council chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Standish. Next item of business is mayor and council reports on current events. Councilmember Jones-Ivy will recognize one of our students in Oro Valley this evening.
Thank you and good evening. It is truly an honor for me to introduce Tanish Doshi to you this evening. You may be recognizing this young man because he is currently one of our Oro Valley Youth Advisory Council, and he happens to be the vice president. And tonight we're here to celebrate his many accolades as a contributing member to our community. Tanish is a sophomore at Bases, Oro Valley, and has kept busy with his academics and many, and when I say many, many extracurricular clubs. He is the executive outreach director for the Arizona Youth Climate Coalition. He's a member of the National Honor Society. He's also on the Governor's Youth Commission, and he's an intern for the Pima County Attorney's Office and Pima County Supervisor Rex Scott. My goodness, you make me want to do this all, live this life over again. And if all of these extracurricular activities are not enough, Tanish has already earned his Eagle Scout rank, and he was a trek leader for the swamp-based summer camp in Louisiana, where he led 9 teenagers and 5 adults on a 66-mile canoe adventure. helping to preserve biodiversity through conservation projects and building wilderness survival skills through cooking, camping, and backpacking. Whew. As you can tell, he's very passionate and he's driven. And it's clear that this young man is an exceptional student with an active member of our community. Tanish, we're so proud of you. And it gives us great honor this evening to recognize you as our spotlight on youth. And we just can't wait to see what else the future has for you, young man. Congratulations.
Tanish, we have a few Eagle Scouts in the chambers this evening, so we welcome you to the Eagle's Nest. Councilmember Green has a report this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. There are a number of veterans I can see within the audience today, and we have some good news for veterans. The National VFW chapter, as well as the state, have authorized the development of a VFW post here in Oro Valley. And for people who are interested, if you can let me know if you want, and you could be a founding member of the Oro Valley VFW. It's very exciting. Our post number is very easy to remember. It's 1 and 4 2s. So anyway, congratulations to those who have been advocating for this and to all veterans.
Could I ask veterans that are present if you would stand for a moment so we can recognize you? Thank you for our freedom. Other reports this evening? Councilmember Jones Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. May I have the slide, please? Thank you. As you know, Project Grad is almost upon us. May 17th is the date. It's a twisted, quirky night, and we desperately need volunteers. As you can see by the slide, they need at least 60 more volunteers just for event setup. And that represents needing 80.7 more volunteers. They also need 130 volunteers to run the event, representing 85.6% more volunteers. And they need at least 115 volunteers for event cleanup. I just appeal to you, please, these are our young people in our community, and we need to help them have the safest grad night they can have. So if you'll please go to the email www.cdoprojectgraduation.com. Please do sign up. We need your family. We need your friends. We need anyone that you can also get your hands on. Again, these are our young kids, and we need to help them have the safest graduation that we can. Thank you.
Thank you. Councilmember Bowen.
Thank you. On the 8th of April, I had the privilege of attending Celebrate Oro Valley. Maybe some of you were there. Some of the really pleasant surprises I saw at this event were some of our parks and recreation staff, both full-time or part-time, donating their time to help make the event go well. It might seem like a simple event, but it takes a lot of people to make that event go smoothly. A particularly pleasant surprise for me was my first visit to the completed garage, which we cut the ribbon on in December. Why do I think the garage is so important and people should know about it? I think it's a game changer for the entire ranch because it gives staff a place to work indoors while an event like that is happening. I've obtained already in my few years a good number of sunburns at Steam Bump Ranch because there's no shade. And so having a building like that already in service really bodes well for the future. So I'd like to thank the Parks and Recreation staff who didn't necessarily have to be there but volunteered their time to make that great event even better. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Other reports? I'd like to briefly report this morning there was a ribbon cutting for State Route 77 Wildlife Gates. This is part of the wildlife effort to protect wildlife along the Route 77 corridor. You may be familiar with the overpass. There's also an underpass. Fencing along either side of the roadway helps direct wildlife to the overpass or underpass to help with their movement across ranges. I want to acknowledge Mr. Paul Kiesler, our Public Works Director, who helped lead this effort, and it was a successful outcome, and I believe this completes the work for the wildlife fencing. Is that correct? Yeah. So it was a wonderful event. Thank you, Mr. Kiesler. Okay, with no other council reports, we'll go to Mr. Cornelison, our interim town manager, for his report this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just have three quick items. So just some quick updates over at the community center. The concrete has been poured for the community center pathway, which is now available for use. They still have some punch list items, but that the contractor and staff have made some progress on that. So just wanted to let you know the good news on that. Also related to that area is we have received 50% designs for the elevator at the community center. So that project is also moving along nicely. Coming up on Friday is our Earth Day celebration, and although Earth Day is technically Saturday, we will be going a day early, and so our town staff will be working together over at Vistoso Trails Nature Preserve, in which I know, Mr. Mayor, you and many of those of you on council will also be participating, so thank you. And a big part of the effort will be to really kickstart, now that we've owned that property since last July of 2022, kickstart our efforts on continuing to address invasive species and as part of our beautification efforts townwide. The staff will be putting in and rolling up their sleeves to get there and pull out some tumbleweeds and buffalo grass, and so we look forward to that opportunity to work on that community project. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Cornelison. I have had a request to move item 6 of the regular agenda to the top of the regular agenda. Item 6 is related to the appointment of our new town manager. Any objection for that change in the agenda? Hearing none. We'll go ahead with that change. Now we'll go to call to audience. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct town staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. Those individuals coming up during call to audience, if you would please state your name and whether you're a resident of Oro Valley. Diane Stephenson?
Good evening, Council. It's a joy to be here. I'm Dr. Diane Stephenson. I've been a resident of Oro Valley for 10 years, and I come to you with a request of call to action for the recent catastrophic death of a young person at the just very close to where we reside on the corner of Pomegranate and Naranja Drive. And I know you've heard of this, but it's very concerning. This is a place very close to where we reside, and the Naranja Park expansion is growing more and more rapidly in a good way, but also bringing concerns for safety for the residents of the community and for children. And I just ask for some significant recommendations for urgency, for funds to create a bike lane, a crosswalk, to reduce the speed limit of Naranja, which is 45 miles an hour, to keep our community safe and make sure that there's a recognition of the catastrophic event that just happened and attention to urgency to prevent further issues and safety for residents and everyone who comes to this community for all the great things we have here in our community. Thank you.
Kurt Reisberg.
Hello, I'm Kurt Reisberg. I am not currently a resident of Oro Valley, but I am a homeowner here. I purchased a home in Sun City along Rancho Vistoso last year. I'm sort of transitioning over from Los Angeles. And I saw on the agenda, and I watched a bit of your meeting last meeting, when there was a discussion of the streetlights along Rancho Vistoso, and, you know, why are they even there kind of issue. And I have that same concern. Somebody mentioned the word aesthetic. You know, why are they there for aesthetics? But they are like the anti-aesthetic. They're antithetical to the whole aesthetic of this whole town. They don't fit in. I mean, they're super bright. They're way overkill. Even if you're going to have some along there, we'd have far fewer, okay? So I'm asking the council to have a flexible, attitude, which I'm sure you do based on what I've seen so far, in terms of those lights, and propose that I support just turning them off, you know, and let's fit in with the nature that is here and that dark sky policy that is regional and as well as citywide. I'd also like to suggest, in case there are objections to this, which there might be some, but having talked to many residents actually in Sun City, I'm not sure all their voices have been heard, because I would say 90% of the people I talk to about this issue are like, why are they even there? Because they shine in people's houses, including the one that I bought, and can't enjoy the gorgeous sky we have here. I would like to say, if there are some compromises needed, possibly a lighted crosswalk. You know, I know that like in Pasadena, where I'm currently moving from, there's ones you can hit the button and like orange lights light up across the road so people can walk across the road safely, just in a couple of critical intersections there. Instead of having 200 or however many lights are on there, you get by with a lot fewer, either just shut off, you know, every other one or some of them anyway. But there's another possibility. Instead of dumping another $1.5 million or however much plus ongoing maintenance, is solar. There are municipal grade solar lights that are dark sky certified as well. I saw some up in Northern California, just north of Tahoe and Truckee, which is an upscale resort town there. And you can get those for about 10 grand a piece for their deluxe version. And they shine light right down onto the road instead of all in every single direction. And they're basically maintenance free. And once the investment is made, that's it. So I just want to support that and give my voice to discontinuance of those lights. Thank you. Thank you.
Elizabeth Lance.
Hello, my name's Elizabeth Lance, and I live on Pomegranate Drive, just like Diane and Joe. Diane spoke first, and I represent residents of the Montero community and also people who use the park a lot. And actually, Olivia Villalobos, the young 13-year-old who was killed on St. Patrick's Day. Her body landed right where I cross Naranja. And I think it really was quite shocking for a lot of us. I did write to the chief of police. I wrote to the mayor, the chief of police, and got responses, for which I'm very grateful. Chief of police directed me to another policeman, and then he directed me to Mr. Kiesler. And Mr. Kiesler, in his email, said on April the 4th, that he was catching up with his messages, and the police department haven't issued a result of the investigation. So, you know, the driver obviously is not being impugned in any way at this point. But he said that they have to look at the speed limit as setting it too high or too low, which surprised me, could create additional safety hazards for other vehicles and pedestrians. He also said they're actively working on a new multi-use path, a MUP, along the north side of Naranja, connecting from La Cunada to First Avenue, that will also incorporate the park entrance, which we all, of course, support hugely. Whatever happened in the accident where the girls were walking is a very narrow shoulder. And for those of us who cycle, it's actually quite dangerous, to be honest. What I'm puzzled about is that the stretch of Naranja between North La Cunada and La Choya has a very nice bike path. So that's confusing. Also, regarding the speed, Lambert is 45, and it's four lanes. Where, down here, two lanes. Tangerine is four lanes, 45. They're all 45. North La Cunada is 45. And I just don't understand why this is 45 when we have lots of roads coming in and the park is really quite busy at times. Mr. Kiesler said the project for the bike path started a few months ago and they're working through the design issues, and I have a feeling that may take a long time. I was wondering, actually, in the interim, whether we could have more police presence on Naranja. I've seen one police car so far, I assume speed checking. It would be nice if we could have police cars morning and afternoon when actually Naranja is quite busy, if we could have speed checks. I think that would be quite comforting for people. And I echo what Diane said about having a light at the park entrance with a crossing. Thank you.
Joe Pickens.
Council, thank you. My name is Joe Pickens. I'm a resident of Pomegranate Drive. I used to be, up until 2 years ago when my term expired, the town's representative to the Pima County Bike Advisory Committee. So I've seen and heard many things, mostly good, about Oro Valley from other people who cycle in the community. And seen some good things on design and some not so good things. I think overall the town has a very, very good reputation. I've cycled all over the United States in the last 10 years, seen a lot of goods and bads. I've been in rides and events where people have died, and it was very sad what happened a few weeks ago with that young lady. I'm mostly concerned, Lizzie and Dr. Stevenson both brought to everyone's attention some of the details. I think that I haven't seen the plans for the multi-use path. I know a lot about multi-use paths. They are the most effective way to go. I know that the data proves it. I think that you're on the right track. The however part of that, though, is the 2 years, from what I'm told, that it's going to take to get it completed. I'm thrilled that it's going to go the full length between La Cunada and First. Whoever pulled that rabbit out of their hat deserves a raise. The thing, again, to loop back to what I started to say, is the interim 2 years that I've been told. I ride on Naranja, since I live in Pomegranate, multiple times a week. If it's true that it's going to be almost 2 years, give or take, before we can put that together where the multi-use is going to parallel Naranja Drive from point A to point B, we're in big trouble. There are ways to do this. I'm real familiar with it. They're called pop-up interim designs until that two-year window is allowed to complete the full thing. As an example, and I'll be brief here because I know that other people would like to talk, as an example, it shouldn't just be a painted lane. That's a false sense of security. It shouldn't just be the police, more of a presence of police. There are things called bollards that are similar to what we've got up in the traffic circle at the intersection of Moore and La Cunada, and flashing lights, whatever the menu allows. If you do nothing between now and the time that those 2 years allow us to complete that, you're asking for potential disasters, because there's a lot of moms and dads, not only the cyclists, who are rushing to drop Johnny off at the soccer field, and that speed is going to be disastrous. Thank you very much.
I have no other blue cards for call to audience. I'm going to close call to audience at this time and continue on with our agenda this evening. We'll go to the consent agenda. Councilmember Bowen has asked that item A be removed from the consent agenda, and Councilmember Bowen and Councilmember Solomon have asked that item D be removed from the consent agenda. I move to approve items B and C of the consent agenda.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Councilmember Bowen, item A.
Mr. Mayor, regarding item A, I've been able to get my questions answered by staff since I made the request, so I would submit that I will approve item A.
Would you like to make a motion?
Yes, I move to approve item A of the April 19th consent agenda.
Seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to item D, Councilmember Bowen, and then Councilmember Solomon.
I will defer to Councilmember Solomon.
Councilmember Solomon.
Yes, I just have a potential change to language on page 14. The third paragraph says, if a member denies having said anything improper, the words recorded by the clerk can be read to the member, and if necessary, you know, the assembly can decide on dot, dot, dot. My question on that is, the clerk, as far as I know, it's not recording what's said verbatim, but we do have a video and recording. So can we put something in there that says the clerk can read it, can be read, or video or audio can be accessed? And that was my recommendation.
How about if we say if the member denies having said anything improper, the words recorded and videoed by the clerk. I know the clerk doesn't video, but recorded and videoed by the clerk can be reviewed, can be read and reviewed by the member. How's
yes.
that?
Mm-hmm. Is it by or to? Vice Mayor Barrett?
I could be wrong, but isn't this language almost directly from Robert's Rules?
It is, but it could well be Robert's Rules wasn't accounting for video. Okay. And I will say, sitting here next to Mr. Standish, who does a remarkable job, that from time to time he's having to scramble. I don't think there's any harm in being able to go back, if there's really that kind of question, in looking at the accuracy of a video. If that's okay, Councilman Burnett.
I have a suggestion. I apologize, Vice Mayor. Go ahead. What if it just simply said, if a member denies having said anything improper, the words recorded can be read to the member, and if necessary, the assembly can decide by vote. I mean, if we just took out by the clerk, that way it in court, I mean.
I think that works.
Okay. Councilman. Yeah, I like that. Okay. Councilmember Bowen.
Just a brief comment on this. Yesterday, I attended the Budget and Finance Commission meeting, and today, when I went to watch the video isn't available. So I don't think it's necessarily a slam dunk right now that the video is going to be available in the future, and I'm very concerned about that. The number of instances I've seen in recent months are certainly probably three times where the video has not been recorded. So I would hope that that's a motivation to our town manager, who I've made this request to, that we really do need to be more reliable in the future in collecting video when we say we are, because there are purposes for which this video can be used after the council meeting. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember Bowen. Any more discussion on this item? I move to approve item D of the consent agenda.
Second.
Mr.
Do we
Mayor.
Need
Vice Mayor Barrett?
I just would suggest that you include your amendment.
Okay, as amended, is that? Okay, and who seconded? I don't recall. Oh, you seconded.
I seconded. Can you read back at the as amended part?
Okay, so the as amended, if a member denies having said anything improper, the words recorded can be read to the member, and if necessary, the assembly can decide by vote whether the member was heard to say it.
I accept the amendment.
Okay. Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to the regular agenda, item 6. Mr. Standish, if you'd please read the item.
Resolution number R23-17, discussion of possible action to appoint Jeff Wilkins as the Oro Valley Town Manager and to approve an employment agreement effective April 19th, 2023.
So I'd entertain a motion. Councilmember Solomon?
Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
Well, I'll make a motion, and we can discuss it.
Yeah, make a motion, and then we can discuss it.
Sorry. I move that we appoint Jeff Wilkins as the Oro Valley Town Manager and to approve an employment agreement effective April 19th, 2023.
Second. Seconded by Councilmember Nicholson. Discussion? Councilmember Solomon?
I just wanted to check if our HR director has any update on the potential starting date.
Good evening, Mayor and members of council. I am pleased to let you know that with a nice conversation with Mr. Wilkins over the weekend, he's very excited to come to Oro Valley, and he is thinking very deeply about the very question that you're asking. He hadn't had enough time yet to really think through what his strategy was, but we committed to communicate in the very near future, and we'll come up with what we think is the best start date. But in the agreement, it actually requires him to be here before July 1st of 2023.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor?
Mr. Solomon, Councilmember Solomon's motion didn't include the phrase approve resolution R23-17. Do we need to approve that resolution?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon, would you mind amending your motion to just include that resolution?
I'll accept that as a friendly amendment.
Okay, thank you.
I second. Okay. Any more questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to item 2 of the regular agenda.
Public hearing, discussion of possible action regarding a proposed amendment to a conditional use permit for Caliber Collision located within the Mercado del Rio Commercial Center north of Pushview Lane, approximately a quarter mile west of Oracle Road.
Principal Planner Michael Spaeth will present this item. Welcome, Mr. Spaeth.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, Council members, members of the audience. My name is Michael Spaeth, Principal Planner with the Town of Oro Valley. As Mr. Standish just read, our purpose for this item is to conduct a public hearing regarding a proposed amendment to an existing conditional use permit for a vehicle repair facility in the Mercado del Rio Shopping Center. Really has two goals. The first is seeking permission from Council to be able to store vehicles outside and replace an existing condition on that conditional use permit, store those vehicles in a storage yard, and then secondly, revise the associated site plan to accommodate more vehicles within that area, and I'll go through that during my presentation. I will also touch on the discussion had during the planning and zoning public hearing, and would just like to remind Council that this is presented for discussion and possible action this evening. Bless you. The subject property is located on Lot 11 of the Mercado del Rio Shopping Center, shown here in yellow, which is north of Pushview Lane, approximately one quarter mile west of Oracle Road. It's just north of Breakmasters and immediately west of Target. Just briefly, the applicant's request is again to seek permission to store those vehicles outside in a storage yard and redesign the conditional use permit site plan to accommodate those vehicles awaiting repair. The applicant is here this evening and is prepared to provide more information during their presentation. I'm not sure why the outline of the building is shifted, but the orange line there is the outline of the building that is not proposed to be changed as part of this application. A little bit of background and history on the site. It is zoned to C2 or regional commercial, as shown in the upper right-hand image in pink. It has a master development plan shown in the bottom right-hand image that was approved in 2004. As part of that approval, it established the circulation within the center, the overall lot layout within that area, and pedestrian connections and buffer yards and things of that nature. The specific property we're discussing this evening, again shown in yellow, was originally a car wash back in 2008, I believe, when that was approved. In 2014, Caliber expanded their facility and took over this site and was approved for a conditional use permit at that time. As part of that approval, there were two conditions, the first being that there are no outdoor storage of vehicles allowed, and the second is that all body work has to take place indoors. The facility itself, Caliber, both this site and the one to the south, has had a prior zoning violation regarding outdoor storage of vehicles, as they did have a backlog of vehicles awaiting repair. I will point out that the applicant has worked with town staff and met with us on a number of occasions to try and address that issue as much as possible. They have signed a code compliance agreement, which was an attachment to your report. A part of that code compliance agreement was to reduce the number of vehicles that have been out on the site and stored there at the time, and that has been reduced by probably 75% or more from when the first violation had been alerted to the town staff. And then lastly, this request before you this evening is really the long-term solution to address that problem from now and into the future. So again, a representative from Caliber Collision is here as well this evening to speak to that in a little bit more detail during their presentation. Again, just as a reminder, conditional use permits are required for uses that require an extra layer of review, as they typically involve the potential to have impacts on surrounding properties. And that extra scrutiny is necessary to make sure that the use is appropriate in its context. The key design focus with this particular request was really on screening from both the CDO multi-use path to the north as well as future development to the west. So while there are four criteria for the conditional use permit, and we've asked the applicant to go through each of those, I'm only going to focus on criteria 2 and 3, which really have to do with compatibility. As many of you know, the site is located within an existing shopping center that has already been developed. The pads were originally graded in 2007. It's located at the rear of the Rooney Ranch Shopping Center, or the Target and Planet Fitness Shopping Center that is that upper graphic. And it's also adjacent to similar intense uses, automotive uses, the brake masters and things of that nature. Again, the existing building is going to remain, and the applicant has committed to putting in an increased screen wall around the entirety of the storage area and supplementing landscaping on the outside of the wall adjacent to the CDO multi-use path to make sure that any visual impacts are mitigated as much as possible. The Planning and Zoning Commission held a public hearing regarding the applicant's request last month. During the discussion amongst the commission, really focused on two things: fixing the existing parking issues that were out there today, which again, this is kind of the final solution or the final answer, to addressing that problem, and then also screening from adjacent uses and minimizing any potential impacts. So through their discussion, the Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended conditional approval of the applicant's request, subject to the conditions included in your packet. So in summary, again, the applicant's request is to amend the conditional use permit to replace the existing condition that says there are no allowances for outdoor storages of vehicles, but instead replace that with outdoor storage is permitted, but only within the entirely enclosed screen wall. And secondly, again, to revise that CUP site plan to be able to make those changes to the site to be able to accomplish that goal. And again, the commission does recommend conditional approval of the applicant's request. The applicant is here to present as well, and that concludes my presentation, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Spath. So we have Andrew Jones from Caliber, who is the Caliber Regional Manager, and Brett Flory with Cross Architects will present at this time. Welcome.
Good evening. My name is Brett Flory. I'm with Cross Architects, 1255 West 15th Street, Plano, Texas. And I'm the architect that does a lot of Caliber's work all over the country for the last 11 years, and including the renovation on that in 2014. So as Michael said, we are here to request outdoor vehicle CUP amendment for outdoor vehicle storage. And all the Caliber collisions typically have outdoor vehicle storage. That's part of their operations. They tried to operate here without it, and it didn't work very well. So, and this has been an extremely successful location for them. So what we're proposing to do is redesign the parking lot in the back area. As you can see, the building there, the building is remaining. But we would redesign the parking layout, expand it out the back to more than double the parking spaces in there. I think we had 32, and now we would have 76 or 78. And so that will more than double the number of spaces that they have, which they believe will be enough for them to operate efficiently there long term. We also will be installing a screen wall all the way around the entire outdoor vehicle storage area. And that will be an 8-foot tall precast concrete wall that's 100% opaque. And we'll have a stone pattern on it, earth tone color to match the area. And we are also adding additional landscaping and filling in everywhere where it's missing landscaping and things have died. And we're also increasing the landscape buffer across the back. So when you're walking down the trail or behind there, the path, you won't see the wall. So it'll be totally screened. This is looking from the parking lot behind Target towards the building. You'll see the wall. It will totally screen all the vehicles behind the fence. That's just another view down a little bit further. This is from the path looking back towards the building. We'll have trees and landscaping all the way across the back of that wall. This is from inside the outdoor vehicle storage area and what it will look like. You can see eight feet will screen even the largest trucks, so there wouldn't be any issues with seeing any wrecked vehicles back there. Well, that's the previous thing. But that's basically what we need to do. Caliber Collision is committed to spend the money to make this work for the town and for everybody involved. They're the largest collision repair company in the world. You might already know that. They've got over 1,600 locations and over 25,000 employees. So they're the industry standard when it comes to collision repair. And they want to make this work for the community and for them too. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have.
All right, Mr. Flory, we'll take questions. I'm going to open the public hearing, and
okay,
then we'll come back to questions, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation. I'm going to open the public hearing at this time for this agenda item, item 2. If you'd like to speak to this particular agenda item, please fill out a blue card and bring it to one of the clerks. I have one blue card, Mr. Paul Loomis.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm Paul Loomis, a resident of Oro Valley. I'm speaking tonight as a neighbor and as a member of the original council that approved the Mercado del Rio Master Development Plan with its condition that there be no vehicles parked or stored west of the repair buildings. My testimony from the planning and zoning meeting is attached to my handout for your information. This CUP and the next item on your agenda turns Mercado del Rio into a vehicle storage, self-storage, and parking lots, much of which will be dirt and dust. It certainly is and will be the fanciest dirt parking lot that I'm aware of. This CUP will now allow at least 42 vehicles awaiting service to be stored outdoors in violation of the original conditions of approval of Ordinance OV-807-04. No outdoor storage of vehicles is permitted. The condition is being changed with no outdoor storage to fully screened and now identifies Lot 12 as an outdoor storage yard. I'm not aware of any council action changing the original conditions of approval. Does fully screened by walls mean the same as outdoor, no outdoor storage? My parking complaint was made more than 2 years ago, and no corrective action has been taken. The current code compliance agreement allows continued parking on the remaining unfinished lots if they are leased by Caliber. No requirements for paving, etc., and was signed without council approval. It also allows continued use as lots may be developed moving west, i.e., the storage and RV storage facility in the next few years. It's no longer temporary parking. They can just move from lot to lot as they are developed. Unfortunately, something must be done. I suggest amending OV-807-04 to allow screened outdoor storage of vehicles awaiting service and requiring paving and landscaping of any employee parking areas leased by owners where necessary. Add to the CUP condition one, all vehicles awaiting service, including those awaiting estimates, must be stored or parked within the screened property. Thank you for attention in this manner. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no other blue cards at this time, so I'm going to close the public hearing and either entertain a motion or if there are questions before a motion can be made. Councilmember Solomon?
A question. Is the screened-in area going to be paved?
Yes, it will. Yes.
Okay. Seems like a pretty good improvement and plan for this property. Thank you.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor?
During the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, you mentioned how many parking spaces average Caliber Collisions have for this type of vehicles. Do you recall what that number was? I'm trying to remember.
Well, they obviously want as many as they can get. Most of their locations are busy. And so, you know, we have a 14,600 square foot prototype that we build new construction. And the minimum number of parking spaces they want for that is 80 parking spaces. But, you know, with these kind of buildings where they go into them and they're not just, you know, perfectly designed for their situation, they can make them work with you know, less. It's just they're good at managing their process and their systems. They have cleaned this up over the past month. And so they can, they have ways that they can do that. If cars are not totaled, if they're drivable, they can have the customer come in, do the estimates from the service rider and work with the insurance company, and then they'll go home and they'll come back when it's scheduled, when the parts arrive, so the car can go directly into the shop and not take up space in the lot. So they're constantly, you know, trying to plan and their workload.
Okay, thanks. I thought you said then that it was something around 40-something, significantly less than this 78. Is that the case?
They're like There are plenty of places, especially in the Northeast, where there's literally like 10 parking spaces, and they have somebody that's a porter that all he does is move cars around all day long.
Okay, so that's so, that's where my follow-up question is. Are all of these cars being repaired at this caliber collision, or are cars being ported from one caliber collision to another throughout the Tucson area, wherever there's space?
They're only fixing cars here that come here. The insurance company sends them to this location. Now, they have sent some of the cars to other locations because, you want to talk?
Yeah, okay. Sorry. I'm Andrew Jones. I'm the director of construction facilities for Caliber. To answer that question, only the cars at that facility is what we're going to work on. If a car gets moved to another facility, it's going to get worked on at that facility. So it's not like we're not going to move from here to, you know, another site here in Tucson unless that car is going to get worked on at that facility. So we're not going to bring other cars in to this location to store them there and then move them back out. We want to keep whatever cars is in process at that facility. If for whatever reason it's not going to be fixed there, it will get moved to where it's going to go, whether it's, you know, another location, or if it's a total loss, then it goes to the, you know, the salvage yard. So we're not going to bring other cars in there just to store at that location.
Okay. I think that was one of my concerns, was if this parking area is expanded so that more vehicles are allowed to be parked in it. You know, we don't want it to become a salvage yard.
Absolutely.
We don't want it to become a parking space for every vehicle that's gotten wrecked in Tucson to await repair.
And I totally understand what you're saying, and we don't want that either. The last thing we want to do is bring a car in that we know we're not going to fix, because, you know, we're here to make money. We don't make money on a total loss car. So we want to get that out of there, so that we can get a car that we can fix and get somebody back on the road, you know, get them back their car repaired for them. So.
Okay. And then regarding the, I guess this question may be more for staff, former Mayor Loomis brought up about parking on unfinished land if it's leased by Caliber Collision. Can you shed a little bit more light on that?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett. So that language regarding land leased by Caliber was specific to the code compliance agreement as we're working through getting that long-term solution identified. So condition one in attachment one specifies that all vehicles awaiting repair have to be stored within the screened-in storage yard. So that, as I was listening to Mr. Loomis's comment, that effectively is taking place of the no outdoor storage requirement. So moving forward, they will have to store all of those vehicles awaiting repair within that storage yard so that the other outside the wall parking lot is available for employees or for customers who are pulling up and are getting consultations, things of that nature. So no, to answer your question, they will not be able to keep just moving around the commercial center, parking vehicles wherever they need to. So,
okay, is there any requirement that prevents them from leasing nearby property and parking on it? Because I do understand the concern about turning vacant lots that are unpaved and not designed for parking into parking lots.
Sure. So, yeah, absolutely. Mayor Winfield, Vice Mayor Barrett. So through this process, we've actually also been working with the Property Management Association, who initially when this site was set up, there were shared parking agreements. So you could have some overflow depending on which businesses were going to be using the parking at that time. That has since changed, and so as of April 1st, there is no allowance for parking on other property owners' properties anymore. So that's no longer an option for them.
Even if they leased the property?
So in our code, to have a parking lot, it has to be associated with a use that the parking lot is on. Right, that's how our code defines parking lots. So if you're not building on that lot, we're not going to permit just a surface lot all on its own. No.
Okay, so our code already addresses
it does
that,
yes,
issue. Okay. Thank you. I think those are all my questions for now.
Councilmember Green.
Do you have any idea how long a vehicle will stay in a given spot before it's completed and out in the world?
It all depends on the severity of the damage to the vehicle and the availability of the parts to repair that vehicle.
So that you don't have any average idea?
We try to get our repairs done within 5 to 7 days.
Okay.
But like I said, it's all going to depend upon the
okay. I'm guessing that a lot of the vehicles are waiting for parts.
Absolutely.
And I guess my next question is, with the breakdown of the resupply system globally, what is that doing? Is it increasing the number of cars that are on the lot?
And that was one of our biggest challenges this past year. And it's starting to correct itself. It's not back to what it was pre-COVID, but it is getting better. And we're, as a company, are putting things in place to not take in a vehicle if we can help it. Like, if the cars can still drive down the road, we'll make an estimate, we'll get the parts ordered and needed, and then schedule a time for you to come back and bring your car to get repaired.
So let them store it in their driveway or garage?
Yeah.
Okay.
And a lot of people like that too, because not every insurance company will pay all the days needed for a rental car. If the car can still be driven safely, then, you know, why get extra, you know, charges incurred?
Councilmember Bowen?
First off, I'd be remiss without complimenting Caliber and providing these 3D images for us, because we're making decisions in front of our residents, and it's really good to see exactly what we're getting. We don't always get this. As a matter of fact, in my opinion, we rarely get this, so I thank Caliber for taking a little bit extra time. This is really, you know, this is my field. This is really normal in engineering to see this. We see far too many 2D drawings and cut and pastes and things like that. My question is for the staff. There are four elements to a conditional use permit, and one of the things that Michael Spaeth didn't talk about was unusual volume or character of traffic. And in the write-up, I see only references to parking and nothing in reference to traffic. Was traffic looked at in any way?
Mayor Winfield, Council Member Bowen. So we didn't evaluate traffic from the context that it's a use that's already there, right? And so the traffic is not changing based off of what the applicant is proposing to do. So there wasn't a need for us to go in and look at the traffic component of that. It was more trying to address the existing issue of overflow parking and whether how that could be resolved and whether or not that meets that CUP criteria. So does that answer your question?
Sure, but I'd like to make the comment. In my view, a CUP is a pretty big deal, mm-hmm. and this is an opportunity for us to learn about traffic in the local area. We've had a recent application where we learned some very unpleasant things about local traffic because we asked for a traffic analysis in combination with the CUP. And I'm just wondering, I didn't see any reference to traffic at all. We looked at it, and we think the number of vehicles is going to be the same. And also, since we have a location, what about, you know, the impact on the back of the shopping center? Was that looked at all? Because this hasn't been there, and now it's going to be there. It seems difficult to me to say no impact whatsoever on traffic.
Mayor Winfield, Council Member Bowen, so if I could just clarify, when you say this hasn't been there, it is there now. Right, like the facility is there operating today.
But not in its current form.
No, I mean, but the only thing that's going to be changing is the internals of the actual site design. So with the screen wall and the insulation from the added landscaping, from our perspective, that was going to be minimizing any new impacts that might be experienced by the surrounding property. So we did not think that there was going to be undue impacts that were not addressed.
Okay, I just simply appreciate, I get more confidence in the staff work if when we're addressing traffic as a CUP criteria, we actually mention traffic in the response. And we could have just said no impact to traffic. Okay. And that would have been actually better for me than what we have here, which deals solely with parking. Thank you. Those are my questions, Mr. Mayor.
Other questions? I have a question for, Mr. Jones. You're the... So cars arriving to collision, they're either driven there or towed?
Correct.
And you mentioned about total loss car. When does an insurer make a determination when a car is total loss or is repairable?
It's usually within the first 24 to 48 hours. And most of our clients, there's a percentage of the value of the vehicle, and we know once it gets to that percentage that the vehicle has then become a total loss at that point. So when they start doing their initial estimates, they can tell right away if it's going to be a total loss vehicle or if it's not.
And so you do have vehicles that are brought to your facility that are a total loss.
Correct. And we get those out as fast as we possibly can because it's just clogging up space so we can have a car that we can actually repair. So
when you were having the dialogue with the vice mayor, I think what I understood the vice, and so vice mayor asking, and I'm not entirely sure that it wasn't clear to me, let me just put it that way. There's other collision centers in Tucson.
Correct.
They're taking in cars just like you are.
Correct.
When they reach they reach the capacity of their facility. And so there's not a shuttling of the extra vehicles that they have from their facility to your facility.
There could be, but it's not going to be to sit there and wait to go back to that facility. If we bring a car from Oro Valley to the other ones in Tucson, it's now going to take assignment from that other location to that location to get the repair done, and then it's going to go back to the customer.
So it's not going to be temporarily stored and then go back to that other center for repair.
No, every time we put it on a tow truck to move it, it costs us money, right? And that money that we can't bill an insurance company for. So if we move it, it's because we want to move it over here to get the repair done faster, or maybe there's a technician that is better with that type of a repair that, you know, was going to be better for that customer. So it's not going to go back and forth a bunch of times just to, you know, play checkers to, you know, hey, we have a spot over here. It just, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense because we also run the risk of damaging that car again every time we put it onto a tow truck.
Okay. Thanks, Mr. Jones. You've answered my question. Mr. Flory, I had a question for you. And I'm in agreement with Councilmember Bowen. I really appreciate the illustrations you have for the proposed development. It is very helpful.
Thank you.
So that's actually raised a question in my mind. If we could bring the slide that shows the east wall that faces Target. There we go. Thanks. When I was on site, I was envisioning that the existing wall that's there that separates your property and the Target Fry's development, that would become the wall. Mm-hmm. But that's not the case.
No, it's not very tall.
Well, I know that it's not very tall, so I just presumed that it was going to be removed, and then there would
That's actually it right there. We left it on there,
right,
and we're
going
to build our wall in front of it. So yeah, that shows you how much taller the wall would be.
No, I understand that. My concern is that there's going to be some, you know, a gap. In fact, it shows there's going to be a gap. It just seems that potentially a bit of a nuisance in terms of litter and other debris,
yeah,
collecting leaf. I mean, we've got trees and so on, so leaf matter and so on and so forth. Any thoughts about that? It just seems like a nuisance.
Yeah, I understand your thought on that. We could talk to I believe the shopping center owns that wall, but we could talk to them and see if they're okay with us replacing it, or maybe we can pull the wall away from it a little further so someone could get in there and, you know, but.
Yeah, I think from my standpoint, the ideal would be, I presume the wall is on a property line, or mm-hmm, is for that wall to go away and for this new wall to be the wall that separates your property and the development's property. And
yeah,
if that's
we can look into that.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Mr. Flory. Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
My question is, when I looked at the number of spaces that you have now and you want to increase to 78 spaces, and whoever can answer this question, please let me know. If you've got 36, you're going to 78, and you're having cars, what is the determination to bring a car to Caliber?
Typically, it's insurance companies. They work.
Okay. But at the time that they're actually wrecked, is there a procedure in Chief, if you can help me with this, is there a procedure that if a car is wrecked on the streets, where is it? Is there a certain place that it ends up at? Because initially it will not have a caliber designation, is that right?
So it's totally up to the customer of where they want to take their vehicle to. Most of the time they'll call their insurance company and their insurance company says, we use Caliber Collision, Service King, whoever else, you're allowed to take your car to okay. that location.
And you're assuming that that's during what, business hours? What
Correct.
About cars that are wrecked after business hours? Where are they towed to?
It's all going to depend on the tow truck driver. We try not to accept anything after hours, but if somebody mm-hmm. drops it off there, I mean, there's no way to stop a tow truck driver from dropping the car off.
Okay, so they can just drop a car off to you?
Unfortunately, they can. They
are
can
you designated to
no.
just...
Oh, sorry.
Chief, do we have a protocol on wrecked cars and exactly where they initially are taken?
Well, good evening, Council Member Joyce Jones-Ivy. The... contract tow company that we use for the town mm-hmm. is Catalina Towing, and they have a tow yard in Catalina. And I'm not quite sure where their other secondary yard is. However, it is usually at the discretion of the drivers that are involved who they would like to call. Sometimes it's AAA or their insurance company recommends a different company. Mm-hmm. So it could be housed somewhere else. However, if they are not able to make that decision, then we call Catalina Towing is our primary tow company.
Okay. And so, again, I really feel I want to help. I really want you to help me understand. If you're doubling, how is it that you're not going to end up with wrecked cars that might be designated to go somewhere else?
I'm not sure I understand what you're asking.
Okay. Again, if a car is involved or cars are involved in an accident mm-hmm. and it's outside of caliber hours mm-hmm. and they're not drivable, I do understand that we have a contract. My question is, how is it that they might not end up at your facility as a drop-off? You just said that you don't have control over that.
The tow truck driver puts a car on the tow truck, and it's up to the customer to direct them where that car is going to end up. If for some reason they drop it off at a caliber that very next morning, we do whatever we can to get it into the actual store, into the facility, so we can start diagnosing where it's at. If a car gets dropped off, we don't want to leave it sitting out there because, it takes up space of what we need to do to allow customers to come in and do what needs to happen. I don't know if there's a way to prevent a tow truck driver from dropping a car off anywhere. I doubt they're just going to drop it off in the Target parking lot, but there's nothing out there that's stopping them from actually doing it.
Do you all contract with AAA?
We contract with the customer themselves under the direction and the insurance companies, the insurance providers recommend they bring their vehicle to Caliber Collision. So our contracts are with the actual customer and owners of the vehicles, not necessarily with AAA or any of the other towing outfits that are out there. So each person whose car gets wrecked is who our contract is with. It's not with a tow company. It's not with the insurance company or anybody like that. It's with the actual customer.
Chief Riley, every car that's wrecked here in our community, do all of the tow trucks that come in, are they aware that we have a contract on where they should be taken?
I'm going to have to ask you to repeat the question. Do the people that are, when we tow vehicles, do
you
the citizens
we
know
contract.
We have a contract?
Name that contractor again.
I'm sorry, Catalina Towing, Council
Catalina Towing. So if mm-hmm. there is a wreck here in Earl Valley, Catalina Towing, if our staff, our police staff arrives, we'll call Catalina Towing.
Councilmember Joyce Jones-Ivy, it's if the drivers involved request us to call our tow company that we have on file or mm-hmm. That are contracted with the town. But other than that, they use whoever their insurance company recommends. So it could be Eddie's Towing, Gary's Towing,
okay,
a whole bunch of different tow yards.
Okay. And again, Mike, the reason why I'm asking is because my concern is you're doubling the size. And I did a site visit also. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to just be honest with you. I didn't get the initial feeling that with the cars that were parked out there, that you needed to double to 78 cars. So I really want to understand why the doubling if you're not going to be storing cars that can be fixed elsewhere.
So to answer that question, when all of this came about, we've actually reduced the amount of intake that center takes so that we don't get too many cars everywhere out there. That's something we've been working on with staff once we first got the violation, is that we had to reduce the amount of cars that we could have in there so they weren't just parked all over the place. So we cut back the amount of cars that we intake right now. There's a lot more volume that shop could do, but because I don't have a place to, we don't have a place to store the cars, we've cut that volume down to make sure we manage the expectation and keep the area with the least amount of cars that we possibly can. So there's actually more capacity at our facility to do more work, but because we don't have a place to store the cars, we're not there right now to satisfy everything that's going on.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Councilmember Solomon, then Vice Mayor Barrett.
Actually, this is for our financial director. From my recollection, when I've taken my car to Caliber for repairs, they're pretty expensive. I mean, they're a high price item, and they collect sales tax on that, don't they?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, that's correct. We do Caliber Collision does remit sales tax, and we do collect that as a town.
I just want to point out, this is an enormous tax revenue source, and the more cars they can service and turn around, because of this facility now allows them to move them through the facility, this really is a benefit for the town sales tax-wise, because you're talking sales tax on not a $15 or $20 or $30 or $100 item. You're usually talking thousands of dollars for these repairs. So these are big-ticket items. They're very beneficial, the revenue to the town. I think the overall project is fantastic. I mean, they're putting in completely screening 75 or 8 paved parking spaces that allow them to process their cars and not have anything outside. So overall, I think it's just a great win-win for the neighbors, in fact, with the improvement in the screening and the customers, because I'm assuming, like most people, I don't drive across town to take my car to be repaired when it's in a collision. When my insurance company says Caliber's a choice, I go, wow, there's a Caliber a couple miles away here in Oro Valley. That's where I go and take it. So I think it's a great local service to our residents. It's a great tax revenue generating service for the town. And like I said, I think it's a great win-win. And I mean, I'm certainly in favor of approving it.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
I'd like to make a motion if we're ready, Mr. Mayor. Okay, I move to approve the proposed conditional use permit amendment subject to the conditions in Attachment 1 based on the finding that the request is in conformance with the general plan and all applicable zoning code requirements.
Second.
Seconded by Councilmember Green. Any discussion? So, Mr. Flora, you mentioned that you would talk with the adjacent property owner about the wall. And yes. So, Mr. Spaeth, I mean, is that something that could be a condition in terms of, so I'd like to add that as a condition that you speak, it's not a requirement,
yeah,
but that you speak with them. If you can come to an agreement, great. If that's not possible, okay, then.
That's no problem.
Vice Mayor.
I'll amend to add, subject to the condition that best efforts are made to approach the nearby property owner about the wall not having a gap.
Sounds good.
Having a shared wall.
Yes.
About having a shared wall.
I would agree with that for my second.
Okay. Very good. Any more discussion, Councilmember Nicholson?
I just want to comment. I agree with Steve that, you know, they're losing some business. They're taking place the cars somewhere else.
I mean, $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 repairs, that's a lot of tax revenue for each one. So I go to Brake Masters all the time, get my oil changed, so I see your car sitting out there. So they have their office in the front. It wasn't really shown too well in here, but, like, you have your office in the front. You're going to park them in the back. So it's that's not in your office. You're going to have people, customers, go into your storage yard. So I have seen them out in the dirt and around, even close to Brake Masters and stuff like that. So I think this is a big improvement and hopefully even bring more tax revenue to the town. So I think it's a really good benefit for everyone in Oro Valley.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Flory. Councilmember Bowen.
Just requesting a little bit of clarification regarding employee parking, because I know these collision centers can get very, very full.
Yes.
Is employee parking expected, all employee parking expected to be outside of the enclosed area in the dirt lots? Is that where we're going in? Or?
Oh, not on the dirt lot. No, they're trying to not park on the dirt lot. Once this gets done and completed, they won't be parking on the dirt lot. But right now, when the outdoor vehicle storage area will be for the wrecked vehicles. If for some reason it wasn't totally full, employees could park back there, but they're expecting it to be full, so the employees would park around the front building. That's where the office is and their main shop and the paint booth, and that's where the customers come. So customers and employees park outside the screen wall, wrecked vehicles and vehicles in the queue waiting to be repaired, and after they're repaired, because insurance companies require them to be secure, will be behind the screen wall.
So we expect, even in a worst-case scenario, that all cars that we accumulate in repair and all employees can actually park in paved parking spaces, because I believe one of our residents raised a concern that.
Yes,
so you really do think that even in a worst-case scenario, this resolves your problem, and we're not going to be hearing, oh, well, those are employee cars, and wow, we got a lot of employees now because Caliber's doing great.
Yes.
But do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. And they, like Andy said, they've taken less vehicles in just until this gets back up, you know, and we get this work done. But they're committed to not parking wrecked vehicles in the dirt lot, employee vehicles in the dirt lot once all this is done. So they believe it a long-term solution that will work for them.
Thank you, and I appreciate your working with the town way.
We appreciate it, too.
Okay, so we have the motion on the floor. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay?
Reluctant yes.
Pardon? Oh, okay. So the ayes have it, 7-0. We'll go to item 3.
Public hearing, discussion, and possible action regarding three items related to a proposed self and RV storage in the Mercado del Rio Commercial Center located north of Pushview Lane, approximately a quarter mile west of Oracle Road. The items include item A, conditional use permit for self-storage, item B, development and landscape plan for self and RV storage, and item C, architecture.
Okay, Principal Planner Michael Spaeth will present this item. Mr. Spaeth.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, members of council, me again. As Mr. Standish indicated, our purpose for this item is to hold a public hearing related to three applications regarding a proposed self and RV storage facility. In my presentation, I will discuss the Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, and these are presented for discussion and possible action this evening. Just to quickly orient everyone, the subject property outlined in yellow is approximately 5.4 acres in size and is again located in the Mercado del Rio Commercial Center, north of Pushview Lane, approximately one quarter mile west of Oracle Road. You can see on the screen it's immediately west of both Caliber Collision and Brake Masters and immediately east of the Oro Valley Adult Medicine. The applicant is proposing a approximately 101,000 square foot self-storage facility and a RV storage facility for about 52 spaces, as shown on the screen. Screening, has been incorporated for both elements of the proposal, and the design includes consistent architectural treatments on both elements of the design. The applicant is here this evening and will provide more detail during his presentation. Just quickly, again, just some background on the site. It's zoned C2 or regional commercial. In that zoning district, self-storage does require a conditional use permit, but I would like to point out that vehicle storage component is, bless you, is a permitted use in the C2 zoning district. Again, there's a master development plan for the center that was approved in 2004 that established the current layout that we see today. Currently, the site is about 60% developed. This blue star shown in the bottom right-hand image represent those lots that have been developed on. About 40% developed, 60% vacant. Again, conditional use permits do require an extra layer of review to make sure they're appropriate for their location and context. And the key focus for the applicant's request this evening, again, had to do with screening, both from the CDO multi-use path to the north, as well as screening of the RV storage area. And then also, secondly, really that this is serving as a land use transition between more intensive uses to the east and less intense uses to the west. Again, the CUP criteria does include four separate ones, but again, I'm going to focus on the compatibility ones. Again, just like the previous item, this lot is located within an existing commercial center that has been previously disturbed. It's adjacent and rear of a regional shopping center, the Rooney Ranch Shopping Center, to the east. It will serve, in staff's estimation, as a land use transition in intensity from the more intense automotive uses, Caliber, Collision, and Brake Mashers, to the east, and then, of course, the less intense uses of the doctor's office and the spa to the west. And as I mentioned before, it will incorporate architecturally consistent elements and be consistent with the approved master architectural guidelines for the center. The second item, item B, is for a development plan and landscape plan. Again, approximately 101,000 square foot building on the north piece that has one or two access points, and it does tie into the pedestrian connections that already exist within the center. And the RV storage is, again, for 52 spaces, will be fully screened from adjacent properties and roadways, and has one access point shown there with a blue star. The landscape plan does include code-required landscape requirements, as well as some enhanced buffer yards, specifically on the north side along the CDO multi-use path to, again, fill gaps where some of the existing native vegetation is a little sparse. And then, as I mentioned previously, it does incorporate screen walls, some pretty substantial screen walls shown in the dashed orange lines. There's a screen wall between the self-storage facility and the CDO multi-use path, as well as a screen wall around the entirety of the RV storage area. The third item, as Mr. Standish indicated, is for the architecture. Both the self-storage building and the RV screen wall include varied roof and wall planes, and it does have colors, materials, and textures that are from the approved master architectural design guidelines for the center. Things like desert hues, rock veneer, parapet walls for rooftop mechanical equipment. And so the screen wall, a representation of that design, is shown on the bottom portion of this image. And the idea for both was to really have it mimic kind of the office development nature of the center, rather than a larger 101,000 square foot building and a screen wall. Again, the Planning and Zoning Commission considered the applicant's request at a public hearing last month. The focus of the commissioner's discussions really focused on the compatibility with the within the larger center and any potential impacts to adjacent uses. The Planning and Zoning Commission has recommended conditional approval of the applicant's three requests. So in summary, the requests before you this evening are for three separate items related to the self and RV storage use, and the commission has recommended conditional approval of items A and B and approval of item C. And I would just like to remind the commission that there are three separate motions, remind the council that there are three separate motions required tonight, and the actions for item B and C require action on item A first. So thank you, Mr. Mayor. That concludes my presentation, and the applicant is here as well.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Spade. Mm-hmm. Mr. Paul Olin with Paradigm Land Design will also present.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of council. Paul Oland, representing the property owner and developer here. So with me is Danny Hinojosa from Johnson Development and also Dale Couture from Ware Malcolm. Danny is going to talk about, spend a couple of minutes just talking through some slides about his company, their company that will be developing this, and then Dale is here to speak to you about the architecture. So I'm going to hand it over to Danny just for a minute or two.
Good evening, Council. Good evening, Mayor. My name is Danny Hinojosa. I am not a resident of Oro Valley, but I want to talk a little bit about our team and who Johnson Development Associates is. So we are a branch of the Johnson Group, and we have offices across the nation, and we have a total of three divisions: multifamily, industrial, and self-storage. I myself am a member of the self-storage division. Here is a list of all our operating facilities. You'll see that we have 45 active facilities. We typically partner with Extra Space or Life Storage. In total, as a group, we've built over 60 facilities nationwide. The picture there on your right was a facility that was opened in Orange County, California. So here is an overview of typical parcels. So the pictures on the top are typically vacant parcels or rundown buildings. And then the pictures on the bottom are the self-storage facilities that we'll build. So we do Class A, fully climate-controlled self-storage facilities. You know, we really invest in our communities with these self-storage facilities. So with that, that's kind of a quick overview of who Johnson Development is, and I'll go ahead and pass it on to Paul. Thank you.
Thank you, Danny. So what's on the screen here is actually what we showed at the very beginning of our efforts here. This is what was displayed at the first neighborhood meeting that we held. And so I just wanted to show you, give you the perspective of where we started, some of the concerns that we heard, and then on the next slide you'll see our solution to those. So what you'll see here is on this slide, the biggest change really has to do with access. You'll notice that on the existing Mercado del Rio street system, there is a drive access right there where the green dot is. I assume you all can see the green dot on your screens. Thank you. And what we had initially proposed is to share that between the doctor's office to our west and also our storage facility here, because that was the intent in the original master plan. So what we heard from the operators of that doctor's office at the neighborhood meeting was some pretty significant concern about mixing of our traffic, which is going to be people coming and, you know, dropping off and picking up their stuff from storage areas. There will be some U-Haul trucks, but mostly just passenger vehicles and pickup trucks. But mixing that traffic with the traffic that is their patients, a number of whom are higher in average age, so they expressed some concern about that, understandably. So the other concern that they expressed during that meeting had to do with the edge, right there. I apologize for the crude design, but basically we had a thin landscape strip between the two uses right along the property line, and they had expressed some concern about privacy, folks on our site, customers being able to look into their rear parking lot, and also potentially being some cross access with pedestrians. So we took both of those concerns along with staff's concern about just that we really needed to beef up the screening around the RV storage and also along the back. You see there's a small wall right about where I drew that last green line that was intended to screen the loading area, but you'll see in the next slide that has been expanded. So those were really the four concerns we heard at the very first meeting. So this is where we are today.
So just kind of running through that same list that I just went through, the access point you'll see has moved from there over to here where there's an existing curb cut. So we're just going to use what's already out there. Customers will come in and then circulate around the site like that. It also is aligned now with our entry to the RV storage area, which is gated. So that pulls the access. It completely separates the access from the doctor's office to the west. The other thing you'll notice is that the landscape buffer yard between our facility and theirs is much wider now. I think it's about 20 feet, so there will now be trees and shrubs and some other stuff in there, along with a 6-foot decorative screen wall. So the idea is we heard the concern about visibility and privacy, and we've responded with a 20-foot buffer yard and a screen wall. So I think that that checks that box. So that's the access. That's the visibility from the neighboring lot. The RV storage screening was another one that we have worked extensively with staff on how to address that, and Dale will show some of those things in his slides. But the takeaway is that we've looked at cross-sections and perspectives from different areas, and what we've come up with is a design that effectively screens all of the RVs that would be parked within that gated block area. And then lastly, along the CDO River Park, again, working with staff on finding a height that screens the facility, the loading area, but isn't any taller than it needs to be. We've now got a screen wall along the back edge there that is 14 feet tall, but that might sound tall, and it is tall, but keep in mind, too, that the CDO River Park path is already 6 or 8 feet above our elevation, so relatively speaking, the wall is only that tall because the path is so much higher to start out with. So from a code standpoint, we've been through all of that review with staff in terms of landscape buffer yards, again, screening, setbacks. It's been through town engineering review in terms of how these access points are actually going to work, and town engineering has now indicated they're comfortable with how we are proposing this. Again, right there, lining up, those are existing access points. So per the old plan, all of our vehicle access is via those internal drives to Mercado del Rio, so there's no direct access back onto Pushview Lane. So again, lining up with that original development plan and not complicating any sort of traffic out onto Pushview Lane. And on the subject of traffic, of course, self-storage is perhaps the lowest generator of traffic. If it's not the lowest, it's close to the lowest. Very, very low number of cars that will be accessing this site. Typically, they're off-peak hours as well, so the traffic impact is very minimal. We have also included preservation of the existing pedestrian plaza, which is kind of right here in the middle. So when you come up that street off of Pushview Lane, that's what you're looking at. So we've preserved that, and we've also provided sidewalk connections to there and then around the site as needed. From a parking standpoint, we meet code. We've also added, just sort of in a nod to the previous case, we've added some spaces where there's some extra room along our eastern edge of the RV area that could be used for additional customer parking or something. We don't expect our users to use that, but it's a good place for it, and we figured that would just sort of help the overall center work better. So that's what's proposed there, and we'll reroute the sidewalk around it as well. We have not only met buffer yard requirements, but met the enhanced buffering and screening requirements that staff has put before us, again, specifically from Pushview Lane and also the CDO River Trail. I will let Dale talk about the specifics of that, but I wanted to... Not sure if that slide I sent you got in there. Well, The slide I had in there was basically just showing a perspective from the Cañada del Oro River Park path, showing the path up here on the berm where it's at, showing the 14-foot wall, showing the building behind it, and then showing that the views off to Mount Kimball and Push View won't be obstructed by the wall. The building, of course, will come up into the foothills of the mountain, but the building is a that's a permitted building height in there, but the wall won't further any sort of diminishment of views. So I just wanted to bring that up. So Dale, if you've got.
My name's Dale Couture. I work for Ware Malcolm in Phoenix, Arizona. I live in Anthem, Arizona. when we were hired by JDA, and we went through all of the addendum of the design guidelines and then the actual Mercado design guidelines to do those, we used all of those. And we, as a group, Ware Malcolm really prides itself on its designs that we can blend in with the community and the surrounding facilities, which is what we took into account. And we had our chance to move our modulated symmetry, and that there's the same cornered shots. Let's see. If you look in the front, there's the same towers that are on either side, but we use the modulated symmetry in the middle to generate interest so that any views from that side and at recommendation of staff. We added more glazing and spandrels glazing into the back that is viewable and kept the same modulated symmetry. So any views from the modular pathway up above would be beneficial, look more like a an office building rather than a self-storage facility. And we've kept it on all four sides. I think that's about it. We have the standard walls that we've tried to use to be compatible with the actual facility itself, so it'd be more blended. And I think that's it. That's somebody else's stuff. Thank you.
Thank you. And just this is a perspective from the basically across the street from right over here, right in this area, looking down toward the wall. So it's just that's one of the perspectives we generated to just double check that the heights of the walls were actually going to effectively screen all of the RVs in there, because within this 3D model there are actually RVs back there. So we're able to adjust the wall to make sure that they're screened appropriately. So that's the development plan and the landscape plan. Also want to talk about the conditional use permit just for a few minutes. So again, you know, as Mr. Space said, we need to meet all of those requirements, those criteria. So I'll just run through those really quick. I'm confident that we meet all of them without any question. So the first one here having to do with not being materially detrimental to public health, safety, et cetera. There's no damage or nuisance arising from noise, smoke, dust, vibration, illumination. This is all free of those things. And again, we'll have shielded lighting, of course, to help cut down on any sort of illumination. There's no hazards that we're proposing. There will be hazardous materials prohibited. So that's an easy one. Fire sprinklers, of course, per code. And there's zero flood risk or impact because as this Mercado del Rio was built years ago, they put in bank protection along the CEO. So everything behind it, including Caliber Break Max, the doctor's office next to us, everything, that's all been protected and pulled out of that floodplain. So well, we're within that area, so there's no impact or risk. And in terms of unusual volume or character of traffic, as I mentioned before, we are an extremely low traffic generator. If you, we asked our traffic engineer to just do a comparison. I say, well, of the uses that are shown on the existing Mercado del Rio development plan that was approved years ago, how much traffic would those generate versus how much would we generate? And just based on the square footages, he came up with a little over 3,000 trips that would have been generated had the development plan been built exactly as suggested back then. But we will be less than 200 trips. So we are a small fraction of the traffic that would have been generated otherwise. Again, we're keeping all of our access internal to the Mercado del Rio streets. And then we've also got, rather than the old school storage designs where everyone would drive up their car to the garage door and open it up, this is all internal access. So customers come in, they've got a loading zone, they've got carts, and it's all key card and secure, and it's got security cameras and lights and everything. So only people who are renting there are able to get in. But it's all internal access, so there's not much fewer cars even driving around the site internally. The second criteria that we need to meet for CUP approval is just that we're reasonably compatible with surrounding properties here. So as Mr. Spaeth mentioned, the RV storage component is already permitted. I've listed a bunch of other uses here you can read on your screen that arguably would be much more impactful, but they are already permitted without conditional use permits. And also just as sort of a, maybe it's a little bit of an aside, but I tend to think that the conditional use permit that's required for storage is a piece of code that was written well-intentioned because when it was written, I think the picture on the bottom was more like what was getting developed as self-storage. But that has really evolved. You can see, you know, our proposal on the top, it's much, much less industrial. It looks more office parky. A lot more goes into the architectural design and, again, the internal access and the security features and everything. It's really a different animal nowadays than it was, even 10 years ago. So we're certainly, I think, more than reasonably compatible with not just what's in the area, but other uses that are permitted outright. Third criteria is that we need to be consistent with goals and policies in the general plan. So I've picked some out here that we certainly meet. Wide range of services, amenities, and shopping. There is a demand for this type of use. It turns out Oro Valley residents have an abundance of stuff that doesn't fit in their garages. I don't think I'll get any argument about that, but there is certainly a lot of demand. We've got, you all have seen the different self-storage users who've come in over the last year or two, and that's all because there's a real need for this use. So this will just expand that to a very convenient location. Another criteria here or policy of the general plan here just has to do with safety and low crime, et cetera, like that. Again, we've got modern security features that I listed already. On-site manager is another one. So it's, again, much safer than the old school kind of traditional self-storage facility. We've got, again, just related to demand, that policy 35E4, having to do with meeting needed services and amenities. And then also it's a little bit of a stretch, but in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions, this is a very central location. We've got a big population base within a small radius. That does equal less driving, fewer car miles on the road. Another one here in the land use section, just basically showing that we're conserving lands that ought to be preserved. Well, this one here was approved for this kind of use and other more intensive uses years ago. It's already been graded. It's shovel ready. So there are no natural or cultural resources to preserve. So we certainly meet that and the spirit of the original approval. Diverse land uses here, meeting the needs and also transitioning toward nearby neighbors. Our nearest residential neighbor is, I think, 800 feet away. There's literally no neighbors, no single-family neighbors. We've all got, we've got the CDO Wash, Pushview Lane, apartments on the other side of that four-lane road, and then, of course, Rooney Ranch Shopping Center, Caliber Collision, Brake Max. So, We are actually a transition down from some of those uses further to the east. And I would argue that Mercado de Rio was zoned for this sort of thing years ago because it was deemed a very appropriate location, in part because of its lack of residential neighbors. So, again, this is all kind of coming together. Another one here, just in terms of cohesive developments, if you look at Mercado del Rio as a whole, I think Mr. Spaeth had a map in his presentation, but there was a trailhead actually dedicated down at the east end, right where the bridge kind of comes over, and that those pedestrian connections, it connects up to the Cedillo River path, of course. We've also got lots of internal pedestrian connections with sidewalks, and again, we're preserving that central pedestrian plaza that was designed as part of that master plan. So I think all in all, the Mercado del Rio does a really good job of providing a good pedestrian experience internally and also has lots of connections to the adjacent amenities there. Also got just the basic one where development pays its fair share. And of course, this, like everything else, will be paying its fair share. A lot of the fair share has already been done within Mercado del Rio because a lot of the infrastructure has already been built. But we will, of course, be paying impact fees that'll go, I'm guessing, to actually other parts of town because this one's already kind of got all the infrastructure it needs. It truly is infill. Again, kind of getting back to community services, meeting larger community needs and goals here. Again, I mentioned the trailhead that Mercado de Rio dedicated as part of its overall plan. So this sort of development is made that possible in the grand scheme of things. And then, of course, it is a very central and infill location. It's very convenient to a lot of people. Another criteria for the CUP, of course, is that the hours of operation won't impact neighbors adversely. We will not. Again, we have no neighbors. We'll be open 8 to 6 for just everybody, and then customer access is 6 to 10. We had proposed 11. P&Z asked to drop that down to 10 p.m., which we agreed. And actually, I think I didn't see that on the list of conditions, so we would suggest that be added on to the list there because that was something that we did agree to at P&Z. So we agree with P&Z. We agree with staff. We're happy with the conditions of approval. We think they're reasonable, and we ask for your approval and ask for any questions if you have them.
Thank you, Mr. Oland. I'm going to open the public hearing at this time. If you'd like to speak to this particular agenda item, this is your opportunity to do so. If you'd fill out a blue card, which is located in the back of the room. I have one blue card, Mr. Paul Loomis.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. I'm Paul Loomis, a resident of Oro Valley. The master development plan for Mercado del Rio was presented as a high-quality office, services, and shopping center. The town approval at the time considered the apartment development to the south and especially the development of homes to the north. How would it affect their views from across the wash and from the hills above? It even considered the Target development and used the auto services as the buffer between the two centers. A 100,000 square foot storage building is not compatible with the surrounding uses, not even reasonably. There was a reason why the center was divided into 16 separate lots. This use combines four of those lots and the associated common parking area for a single building and an RV storage facility. I urge you to use your imagination and ask yourself if you think the storage facility less than a mile to the north is compatible with its surrounding area, Basis School, Pima Credit Union, and the Steam Pump Ranch Historical Park. At least one of their floors is underground. It doesn't fit, nor will this building fit into a future Mercado del Rio, but it will change the character of the overall development. If this is approved, it will be the sixth long-term storage facility within less than 5 miles of each other. Oro Valley is becoming the self-storage community of the Northwest. I urge you to disapprove the CUP for the proposed self and RV storage in the Mercado del Rio Commercial Center, finding that it is not a compatible use with the neighborhood. Thank you for your attention and for all you do. Thank you.
Paula Donnelly.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members. My name is Paula Donnelly, and I've lived in Oro Valley for over 38 years. I actually am one of the original owners and developers of Mercado del Rio. I have no interest in it currently, and I haven't for over 13 years, other than it's a matter of pride for me. I was the author of the architectural concept plan, the sign code, the CCNRs, originally, the vision for this was to allow business owners to actually own their building and their business and create equity in their businesses and in the land. I just want to commend Johnson Development and their architect because not only did they meet the architectural requirements, but they far surpassed them. It's a beautiful building, so I have to say that. It's unfortunate that that project has sat mostly vacant for so long. And the current owners of most of the lots do not live in the Tucson area. Excuse me. And so, in my opinion, it's kind of seen better days as far as the landscaping goes and the maintenance and that kind of thing. So I welcome somebody coming in who would have pride of ownership to just improve the overall look. As far as the scale goes, we actually, the original owners, actually purchased a Marriott franchise for a hotel on these very lots that would have been three stories. We went through a development process with the town, but then 08 hit, and it didn't make financial sense, so we didn't move forward on it. So as far as massing goes, that would have been as large with more parking, probably. So anyhow, I'm here to speak in support of it, and I hope you'll support it too. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. I'm going to close the public hearing and open it to a motion or questions that council has for the applicant. Member Bowen.
Thank you. I have some specific questions regarding self-storage contracts and hazardous materials. Can you help me with those? One of the conditions of the conditional use permit is that hazard to persons and property from possible explosion, contamination, fire, or flood. There's mention in here of disallowal of storage of flammable materials. How do you know when a new customer comes in that they're not bringing you explosive materials to store? You know, how does that process work where you protect yourself from the storage of explosive materials?
Yeah, thank you. Great question. So obviously that would be a huge risk to us as an owner. So every customer that comes in has to sign a contract with that operator. And in that is that agreement that they will not go ahead and store those items. Now, when customers are bringing items in, typically management is there to assist them at least locating that unit. And certainly we have, like Paul alluded to, you know, substantial security. So they will watch, you know, what is brought in and whatnot. So I hope that answers your question.
So you have the ability to monitor what comes into each unit if you need to.
That's correct.
Thank you. My second question is, I believe it's for the Community and Economic Development Director, and so I'll give you a second.
Mr.
DePaul. I think we're all aware here on the council that there's been a lot of self-storage projects coming into Oral Valley. There's been a lot of requests for recent approvals. Does your department have any role in helping to inform new applicants about what's in the area, or do we more or less just expect them to do their own due diligence regarding, you know, who their neighboring storage facilities will be?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen. It's the latter. We expect them to do their own due diligence.
Okay. So thank you. Sorry for dragging you up for that, but that was my only question for CED. The next question would be for the town engineer regarding traffic.
Mayor, Councilmember Bowen.
Says, thank you, Paul. I'll just read from the write-up. For example, the retail space depicted on the existing Mercado del Rio development plan within the same project boundary would generate approximately 3,076 daily trips, whereas the proposed self-storage building and RV storage will generate less than 200 daily trips. In the case of both of those numbers, how do we verify that the previous plan would create a projected 3,000 trips, and sure, that the new plan in 2023 will create 200 or approximately 15 times less?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, those are numbers through the ITE, which is our standard litmus that we use to calculate projected traffic. So we ran the numbers ourselves, independent of the applicant, and we came to the same place. It's about a 92% reduction over what's already entitled.
So I don't believe that was explained very well in this whole process. What was entitled there that would have generated up to 3,000 trips?
Sure. It's retail commercial.
But does the nature of the retail commercial, you know, what specifically is planned impact the 3,000 trips?
Sure. Shopping center. So the shopping center ITE category 820, to be specific. So that's the difference between the two.
Okay. And then regarding the well under 200 daily trips, I know that you've come in here and you've even shown us you have access to the manuals from the ITE regarding the most current data. Why is there any reason why we say well under 200 daily trips, or can we be a little bit more precise on that?
162.
Okay. Well, thank you. Regarding 162 trips, do we look at the impact on Push Ridge Lane of the new traffic?
No.
And why don't we say we didn't?
Sure. Again, good question. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, this entire master development plan had gone through council in 2003 through 2004 with a heavy analysis, A to Z. It was a year before I came to the town. I have to rely on previous councils and previous developments to go in through and make sure that they did all of their homework correctly. I couple that with that this is a non-issue area for us. It's non-accident generating. It's not an area that is on my radar as your town engineer. And when we have a development that has decreased traffic by a very substantial amount, it's not incumbent upon me to force them to do a complete TIA to evaluate push view traffic. Now, if council wants to determine what the traffic is on push view, the interaction with the shopping center, that's perfectly okay, and we're more than happy to have that done, but that shouldn't be borne on the back of this development because of how they actually reduce traffic.
And how do you know that the impact will be minimal? Did you do your own analysis, or is it just anecdotal in your personal experience?
It's actually both. So my personal experience as a engineer for over 30 years, coupled with my knowledge of what the traffic generation will be between a commercial retail center and a self-storage, I already know walking into the room, it's a greatly diminished number. With the same thing if it were a retirement home, a greatly diminished number. So I already know that walking in through the door. So again, on the onset of a project like this, we're not going to make an applicant do a TIA when we already have a functioning area and they're actually reducing what could be entitled
without going through that analysis at all.
But when you say a functioning area, do we have a previous traffic analysis of this area? Do we know what the level of service on Push is now, or we just haven't looked at it for a long time?
It has not been looked at for a long time. And as I said, if council wants us to look at this, we can look at it. But again, we would look at that separately.
And just thank you. And to recap real briefly, there's one category that you looked at for the existing use, and that was a single IT category, shopping center, and you had a certain amount of square footage, and that's how you generated your 3,000 trips.
That is absolutely correct.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Councilmember Solomon, then Vice Mayor Barrett.
My question was answered. Thank you.
Okay, Vice Mayor.
Thank you. I have a question for staff about vehicle storage is permitted in C2. Could you, if I'm recollecting correctly, and maybe you can refresh my memory on the code because I don't have it right in front of me, but the vehicle storage is permitted as an accessory use in C2. Isn't that correct? No one can just go build an RV lot in any C2 zoning in the town, can they?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, I will pull it up just to be perfectly accurate here. Give me just a sec. All right, so. Okay, so in these, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, in the C2 zoning district, a storage facility that does include a parking garage, but doesn't have to be a parking garage, is a permitted use in the C2 zoning district, yes. So not an accessory. So if that was your business that you were running, you could have a surface lot if that was your business, right? As opposed to in the previous item where if Caliber wanted to spill over onto another lot just because they had too many vehicles, that's not allowed. But if you were running a vehicle storage facility, you could do that as a permitted use in C2.
Okay.
Sorry.
Thanks. Thanks. And so with that, Mr. Mayor, I'd like to make a motion. I move to deny the conditional use permit for the proposed self-storage use based on the finding that it's incompatible with surrounding properties and that it is not consistent with the goals and policies of the general plan.
Second.
Mr. Mayor.
Discussion. Councilmember Solomon.
I don't understand. Everything that was presented says it's 100% compatible.
Mr. Mayor.
I've been looking for the findings that say it's not compatible. Because if you look at the motion, it says if you approve it, it's because it meets it. And it says if I deny it, move to deny the permit for the proposed self-storage use based on the finding that. There's been no finding that it's not consistent. You even had the original owners and developers of this project state that they felt it was compatible. Everything changed
Mr. Mayor,
in 2008.
Point of order. I just like to ask, I believe after a motion is made, the person who makes the motion is entitled to speak on the motion. So I'd just like to ask for that opportunity before I'm questioned on the motion.
Sure, go ahead and.
Sorry, I'm not intending to interrupt, but I feel like I didn't get that opportunity, and Robert's rules do allow that.
There is an ability to deny if the characteristics of the proposed use are not reasonably compatible, but to the extent that you can give that detail, that'd be great.
Right, thank you. So I'd like to speak to that. So it being reasonably compatible with the surrounding uses, the other uses that are zoned for this property are retail, restaurant, those type of uses. I feel that the massing and the building of having a self-storage facility there will diminish those uses. And the third criteria for a CUP is that it be consistent with the goals and policies of the general plan, and that's kind of my main focus. So on number three, the goals and policies of the general plan, I would read those in a different way than they were presented here. For example, it says we would have a robust local economy and job market that provide opportunities for quality employment, build on Oro Valley's assets, and encourage high-quality growth. A community with a wide range of services, amenities, shopping, and dining opportunities, and housing types that meet the needs of current and future residents. It was mentioned we're having three different proposed self-storage facilities come through. This council, we approved one next to the Aquatic Center just down the street. We just barely approved one right by Lehman. We have yet another self-storage facility in the queue to be coming through for proposal. So in terms of looking at a variety of wide range of services, amenities, shopping, and dining opportunities, I don't personally feel that another self-storage unit and facility is in compliance with those goals and policies of the general plan. And while we do want to avoid excessive traffic, I think that the traffic numbers themselves also somewhat support that, because as was stated by our traffic engineer, this isn't a high problem area, and so it's an area in our general plan that's encouraged for high growth and for high retail growth. So 162 trips versus 3,076, you know, that's probably the worst case scenario. I'm not sure that adult medicine is generating that full number of trips. However, it goes to show the amount of economic activity that would be in this potential site. And that's what the general plan, in my mind, is speaking to when it, you know, designates this area as a high potential growth area. And so that's why I feel that it's not compatible with the goals and policies of the general plan.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon.
Right. Question for our planning and zoning folks regarding the use on this property, if you could come up. Is a tumbleweed farm an approved use for this property?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Solomon, I don't believe that's a use category in the zoning code.
Well, that's what this property is, a tumbleweed farm. We all know it. This property, what the Vice Mayor just described, was wonderful. That's what was envisioned in 2004. Let's come 20 years later now to reality of 2013. There is no high-volume, high-end retail center that's going to buy and move into that property. If it was, they would have done it. We have to face reality and what today is. We have a vacant property whose original use is no longer desirable for many factors, including the crash in 2008 and the change in business practices. We now have a property owner and developer coming, proposing to finally turn this into a use for our residents. People, once again, don't drive across town to use self-storage. I am reasonably sure that 90-plus percent of the people using self-storage in Oro Valley are Oro Valley residents. Ask yourself this question. If you wanted a self-storage unit, would you rent one on the west side of I-10 in Marana, or would you rent one 2 miles from your home? I think the answer is obvious. As far as the number of self-storage units, I did not realize it was this council or the government's position to tell businesses how many of a certain type of businesses they may build with their own property in areas that are zoned or appropriate for that. It's not up to us to say there's too many nail salons already in this community. You private business owners should not use your invested money or your life savings to build another nail salon. We don't think you should do that. That's not our job, just like with self-storage. These are grown-up adults who are professionals in their area. They've done their analysis. They think a self-storage unit will be financially viable. If they're wrong, it's their money, that they lose, just like every single business that opens up. So I don't think that should have any factor in whether or not this is. Once again, yeah, I'd love the retail, and I'm sure the original developers would love the retail to be what they had hoped to be in 2004. That's not it. If we don't have a use like this, we certainly don't have people lining up asking to put different uses in here. I think it's completely compatible with the surrounding uses. This is an isolated commercial area with zero impact on residents. We all know there's no traffic issues on this section of the road. It's been told to us. This is not going to generate any substantial traffic whatsoever. So I just do not understand how you could possibly find that it doesn't meet the criteria for this type of use. And if it's not approved, it'll sit vacant. Thank you.
Councilmember Bowen.
Could we have the slides advanced, please? I'd like to go over the individual general plan criteria. For our public, the general plan we created 10 years ago actually has 136 criteria. I believe 10 to 12 are actually covered here. A couple of them that raise concerns for me are 3.5.E.4, self-storage supporting the Oro Valley workforce and residents through education and training programs and needed services and amenities. This is quite a reach. Educational opportunities, employment's very low. Another one that I question is 5.5.LU.5, provide diverse land uses that meet the town's overall needs and effectively transition in scale and density to neighborhoods. Once again, we've had many different applications for self-storage that come through just in the last year or so. I don't think that this is kind of a reach, too, in terms of the diversity. What I wanted to explain to the public is the general plan is a lot more than what applicants share with us. They generally share with us 10 to 15% of what's actually in the general plan. And I'm disappointed in staff that they let this go through. There's 136 things to look at. And I don't even know, and I'm tired of going through the general plan. You can shake your head all you want, Paul, but this is just a snippet of our general plan. I don't know if there are other elements.
Excuse me, point of order.
What's the basis of your point of order?
Point of order basis is that I think a council member was just disrespectful to a staff member, and a staff member hasn't done anything.
No. Councilmember Bowen was simply saying that he was disappointed. Pointed in staff. I don't think he was being overly or disparaging. So, Councilor Bowen, you may continue.
Yes, so thank you. So I agree with the Vice Mayor's motion that in terms of general plan compatibility, this is a weak application, and I will support denial. Thank you.
Mr. Olin, did you want the floor? Or?
Well, I was going to offer just one thought that market demand is, and Mr. Rothschild can correct me, market demand is not a legal basis for consideration here. What is up for consideration are, these approval criteria. And I've got a gentleman here from Johnson's senior staff who can talk about all of the analysis that they do to show that this is demanded. And so, I mean, in a nutshell, and I'll call them up here if you'd like to hear some of that analysis, because it's extensive. They don't make these decisions lightly, but this is a service. I understand that it's not adding to the diversity of services because most services that people want are available here. But what they are looking for is additional opportunities for self-storage. Your constituents, your residents are demanding more self-storage in Oro Valley. They want to rent self-storage here. They want to rent in a high quality area, and there's ample market data to show that. And that, I get that there are others that have been through here, and that's just underscoring the point. When they do their market analysis, they consider all the ones that are in process. They add those into the soup. They don't operate as a as if nobody else is building here. The last thing they want to do is build something and then find out that, oh, there was one built a mile away and that sucks up all of our demand. No, they're investing millions and millions of dollars in a successful operation. As far as the general plan goals and policies, Councilmember Bowen knows as well as anybody else that for any given project, there are a subset of them that are actually applicable to any given project. So if the metric, if the bar that you have to meet is conformance with even the majority of those 100 some odd policies, then no project is going to get approved. The question is, are we meeting the majority of the applicable goals and policies? And this one we are. So again, I would offer, Bo Gunn can come up here and talk to you about the market demand that is actually there, that Oro Valley residents they're asking for this kind of use. And he can provide that explanation if that helps you understand that this is something that your citizens are asking for.
Vice Mayor?
I don't feel like market demand is a criteria, although one of the criteria does look at the variety of uses in the area. And I don't doubt that there's demand for self-storage. I think we've seen that amply on this council. I don't doubt that there's money to be made in putting in self-storage. I just question that that's the best use for Oro Valley. I don't think that we're in a race to meet build-out by filling every available square footage with the most readily available item. And I just want to point out that in the general plan, this section around this area in the dotted line, you can't really see it, but is the tier one growth area. It's designated as an area that is specifically for high intensity commercial uses. So those types of uses that are going to generate traffic and things, and the roads are designed for that. And it's that Oracle Road commercial corridor that is, you know, designed in that area. So I think where we have an area that's already designated for commercial, that's already has the infrastructure available to support commercial, I think that our general plan doesn't support turning all those areas into self-storage.
Councilmember Solomon.
Well, once again, I believe it's the job of the council to realize the current reality, not just the current reality, the last 20 plus years of reality. The market has changed. We have an excess of commercial property in Oro Valley compared to the number of rooftops. We have a tier one or high use designated commercial area that has totally failed to meet that for the last 20 plus years and more than likely will never meet that because there's been absolutely no indication that there's any demand for that type of use on this property. So to deny that fact is a disservice to the community. And yes, you'd like a variety of services, but we also want the proper amount of services. For example, if our apartments are 99% occupied, even though we have apartments, that indicates we need more. Obviously, there's a demand for this type of use, and if the residents want this type of use, and we have people willing to build this type of use in an appropriate commercial center, then it certainly makes sense to allow them to do it as opposed to say, well, let's hope 20 years from now something else may come along. I just don't see that as a rational basis for denial.
Mr. Olin?
If I could comment one more thing. I remember several years ago there was an application for multifamily at the southeast corner of Tangerine and First, and currently designated commercial, and research and development had been added as a permitted use.
Mr. Olin, we're kind of off topic here, we're talking about this particular site.
So at the time, Vice Mayor Barrett.
Mr. Olin? Let's not go to.
Okay. A criteria that has been used is giving property that's entitled a chance to see if the market will come up with uses and users. That's been given as a reason for denial before. This one has had that chance. This one is all of these things, restaurants, offices, retail, a lot of these uses that were just listed a few minutes ago have had a chance to be developed there for many, many years. And they haven't. They haven't. And now we've got a user that is within, I think, high intensity. High intensity doesn't just mean traffic. It means massing, it's size of the building. This is C2 zoning, so you've got light industrial, you've got grocery stores and hotels. Those are all things that are allowed, so those are intense uses, and parking garages. This site is perfect for this use, and it's had 2 decades to be developed as something that we can all admit might be cuter, but it's had its chance, and it's now sitting completely unproductive, both to the town from a revenue standpoint and to the residents from a services standpoint. And we have a chance to use some of it for something that they are demanding. It's had its chance.
Okay, we have a motion on the floor to deny. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No. Nay.
So I believe the vote is 5-2 to deny. With the denial of item A, that means that we do not go forward with items B or C. So we'll go to regular agenda item. Well, we're going to take a 10-minute break. Mr. Standish, item 4.
Resolution number R23-16, discussion and possible action to adopt the fiscal year 23-24 through fiscal year 24-25 strategic plan.
Thank you. Innovation Technology Director Chuck Boyer will present this item.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Council. Tonight we're looking to see if there are any further changes that you may have to the strategic plan for fiscal year 23-24 and to 24-25. You've had this document in the council packet. I did want to point out a couple items. First of all, you may have noticed that there is a numbering change, and we're doing that numbering change to really adopt to the new software program that we're going to be doing the report on, which you'll be seeing the upcoming report here shortly. And then we did add in the Rooney Ranch item on 4.3.5. After reviewing the council notes, that was an item of discussion, and it seemed the majority of the council was interested in bringing that forward. It's in the current strategic plan, and there still seems to be some focus on that. So with that.
Thank you, Mr. Boyer. Any questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you, Chuck. I'm seeing 2 pieces of information that seem to contradict. Regarding a goal in the general plan, which I understand, strategic plan, pardon me, I misspoke, which starts July 1st of this year, I see evaluate the feasibility of improved police and court facilities and develop a project proposal with options. But I also see a fiscal year 23-24 budget that's already come out with $1.5 million for courtroom upgrades for this fiscal year. So I'm wondering, have we already made our decision on the court facilities, or do we plan to do a feasibility analysis and only invest in capital that it conforms with that feasibility analysis? Can you tell me, like, what the $1.5 million is if we haven't actually done the feasibility analysis?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I'll take a stab at it, but I'm pretty sure I'll be referring to Deputy Town Manager Cornelson. We have that budgeted in anticipation of an outcome of that, but...
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, so that item is included as part of the recommended budget. Yes, we do have an item within here to evaluate the facilities, not just the police, but also for the court. So that would be an opportunity as part of the budget, and it, although it is before July 1st, it is a budget item. And as part of the last year's budget, council did authorize the design for the courtroom, and so this is a continued of that effort from the current fiscal year budget.
Is it correct that if $1.5 million appears in the budget for this, we anticipate spending that money by June 30th, 2024?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, that is correct. That project, though, is broken into two different fiscal years, and I just want to clarify that. So it's not just wouldn't just be this next fiscal year; it'd be also going into the following fiscal year as well. But yes, the goal would be to spend this recommended amount should council adopt that and move forward with that project by the end of that fiscal year.
And that's being anticipated without even a plan or a feasibility and study in place as of today, April 19th.
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, feasibility study. There was evaluation regarding the court's needs, and we worked with the magistrate regarding his needs and future build-out, in which I believe the judge and, Mr. Kiesler are here, and they can also speak to that as well. And I don't see Judge Hazel here anymore.
Okay, and to elaborate a little bit of what specifically I'm talking about, it's objective 3.3.1, and the wording is simply evaluate the feasibility of improved police and court facilities.
Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, so Interim Town Manager Cornelson mentioned, we have been working side by side with the courtroom to not only provide space for their current needs, which are they have some security concerns. I'm sure you're well aware of what's the issues are within the present courtroom, but also the ability to expand staff as well to move into the future. So we have been working side by side to make sure that those needs are met, that we are building them a facility for the future. And it's an iterative process. We're in the throes of the design right now, and we'll be finishing up the design this fiscal year. And then we'll be moving into the first phase of construction next fiscal year if you approve that in the budget.
And Judge Hazel has made us well aware of what he perceives as the deficiencies in the current court facility are. I was just wondering, is there any plan to show the council what would be purchase for this $3 million in advance of actually spending it, or will we just see the final product?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, we can certainly send you the design as they are working through that as a part of a council report, if you'd like. Absolutely.
That would be much appreciated. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. That's my question for this round.
Other questions? Vice Mayor?
Objective 1.2.1, we took out the specificity of the key economic sectors, and I would kind of like to put some of that back in, and maybe I'm alone in that, but I just feel that the way it reads now, support and encourage the current key economic sectors in Oro Valley while exploring opportunities for new growth. I feel that that's very vague and could be used for, anything. Like we heard tonight, what are our key economic sectors in Oro Valley? So I feel like we should identify what those are rather than say anything that generates any type of economy or has any demand. So I don't know how the rest of the council feels, but I kind of liked the way it was. So, and if I'm the only one, then that's fine. I'll accept the way it is, but I just could see it being used to support almost anything.
I'll comment. I don't like the way it was because it limited it to one sector of our economy, and that was it's referred to as the bioeconomy. So we certainly have a bioscience sector of our economy. We have an aerospace sector of our economy. We have a health industry sector of our economy.
Could we list those? Or because, I mean, it's not self-storage. It's not, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's just, for me, it's a little too broad.
Councilmember Nicholson?
I mean, maybe some type of definition from Paul or something might help us, because I'm kind of thinking like primary employer type businesses like Roche or something like that, or even U of A coming in, bringing in business. But, you know, obviously like the service sector is probably 30% of our jobs in Oro Valley, but I don't know if necessarily like we want to spend money and do a lot of stuff to bring in just service sector type jobs, or bring in primary employment that brings in higher income earners. Like those are things that you try and bring in for a town to really boost up your town.
Mr. Mayor, I do want to point out that it is under the goal that is related to what Councilmember Nicholson is suggesting, which is to attract, expand, and retain primary employers to encourage growth and development of job opportunities. So
I think that's
it would
a good
be related
point.
To that.
Yeah. Councilmember Nicholson. Yeah.
Okay. And then my other comment was on 4.3.5, which is the Rooney property. And again, here the question is, do we want to be a little bit more specific about the type of potential options and uses that we're looking for? I know, when I was looking at the Rooney property, I was thinking about commercial and economically viable uses for that property. So we could leave it just the way that it is, or I don't know if we want to make it a little bit more specific so we're all clear on, you know, what it is that we're talking about when we talk about analyzing and providing options for. Because I wasn't anticipating that it would be funded entirely by the town.
Does council have a suggestion?
I'm fine with the way it is, but.
Okay. They like it the way it is, so I like it the way it is. Thank you.
Okay. Well, I'm going to.
Mr. Mayor, I think Councilmember Bowen had a question.
Okay, Councilmember Bowen.
Yes, regarding 4.3.3, implement a public art maintenance plan. I may misunderstand what public art is, but to me it's something that we create in Oro Valley, and it's a special thing about Oro Valley, but it's created by the property developer. Is this a plan to help or perhaps initiate the maintenance of public art on, you know, commercial facilities for the benefit of these commercial facilities?
Mr. Mayor and Councilmember Bowen, actually it's for the town-owned art. It's generally called public art because it's accessible to all the public, but the private sector already has a maintenance program. We needed a maintenance program for the town-owned art.
How about if it read...
Thank you. Would it be inappropriate to just add town-owned to that verbiage?
That was going to be my suggestion, Councilmember Bond. That helps clarify it.
And then the second question I had was on 7.1.2, and it states, evaluate current costs to control expenditures. I imagine we might be coming up with new ways of doing that, but I would maintain to the town that we have a way or a way of doing that works, and that is reporting the monthly financials at the council meeting. That's a way where we're evaluating the most current costs that are on a monthly basis, and we, by keeping our eye on the monthly costs, it helps us to control expenditures. So if that's not what's being envisioned by staff to meet 7.1.2. Could staff perhaps share with us other ways in which we could meet 7.1.2 over the next 2 years?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, if I recall the discussion on April 5th, due to the wording of 7.1.1 that was talking about evaluating new revenue sources and creating new opportunities, there wanted to be some other way of talking about cost savings. And so this was what we crafted to accommodate that. Yes, we already do that. It's part of our normal process. We do it every budget. We do it every time we make a purchase. But if you have something more specific that you'd like to see, we're going to have more specific goals tied to these when we come out with the final as we do our reporting. But
well, the more specific thing that I'd like to see, but I'm not in the majority on this, is to return to our monthly financial reporting. It's something that served us well over many years, and I just hope that we can return to it. That's all.
I move to approve resolution number R23-16, adopting and approving the FY 2023-24, FY 2024-25 Town Council Strategic Plan, including the edits that you've received tonight based on input from Council. Seconded by Councilmember Green.
Would you like me to read back? I've noted two edits I believe Council's in agreement on.
Yeah, please.
Excuse me, one edit I believe Council's in agreement on, and that would be the 4.3.3 for town-owned.
Town-owned public art.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, nay?
Nay.
The ayes have it, 6-1. Mr. Standish, thank you, Mr. Boyer. Item 5,
discussion and possible action regarding the potential expansion of the town's school resource officer program.
This item was requested by Councilmember Solomon and Councilmember Green. Councilmember Solomon will present this item.
Thank you. I'd like to make a motion. I move that Oro Valley adopt the following policy. Every school in Oro Valley with an enrollment of 200 or more students shall have a school resource officer or other alternate security approved by the Oro Valley Police Chief. Oro Valley shall request a 50% reimbursement from each school for the cost of the Oro Valley provided SROs.
I would second that.
Mr. Mayor, the police chief is going to speak on this issue. I just want to point out one or two things, and that is that it says request a 50% reimbursement. In the past, when the economic times are very difficult, the school districts and other schools did not have the funds for this. I believe that has changed. And if they do have funds available, it's something that we should consider pursuing. And it was specifically not mentioning individual schools as to whether or not what their current status of SROs are, and that's something that Chief will discuss.
Okay, Chief Riley.
Great, good evening. Thank you for allowing me to speak briefly on the Oro Valley Police Department School Resource Officer Program, Mr. Mayor and Council. When this was agendized a couple weeks ago, I feel like it's a great opportunity for me to showcase the great work that the men and women of our School Resource Officer Department unit does for the town, and in particular our youth. So I'm going to go over a very high-level presentation. As Councilmember Solomon did explain, it's very cautious in our industry to talk about specifics with strategies and deployments. And so I do want to begin with, I'm not sure if this moves the screen or if my partner in the back does it. I do it. Okay. So this is the end in mind, which is the mission statement for our police department. It's recently been revamped in the last year, and I do want to focus on the two words of courageous and selfless service that these men and women do for the entire community. I also want to point out that the it worked. I got it. Thank you. That the Oro Valley School Resource Officer Unit has its own mission statement as well, as do all the units in the agency. And you'll notice that it's to have a positive interaction and build partnerships with the school community as law enforcement officers, informal counselors, and teachers. So with keeping that in mind as we talk about this unit, you should also know that we as a community have had a school resource officer program for well over 30 years. That is included in our elementary schools as well. And so I did want to just mention that. You should also know that our whole goal is always about prevention and interaction or in engagement with the community at the school, the administration, and the faculty. But also realize that when there are critical incidents at any of the schools, it is not the sole responsibility of the school resource officer. And I'm going to talk about regional collaboration here towards the end. It is the responsibility of every member of this agency and, frankly, the community. But you should also see that our response times overall with the agency are excellent. And I put these in here so you realize how quickly we are able to get to schools in our community. But our priority one responses, which you will see are an emergency response involving serious threat to life. We are under 5 minutes 74% of the time. And overall, our priority response is 4 minutes and 1 second. Our priority two, you will also see, is 875 calls last year. These are 2022 numbers, was 4 minutes and 40 seconds. So very impressive. There's variety of national standards you can Google, and you'll see that some say the national standard you'll get on these responses is usually 8 to 10 minutes. So certainly these are very impressive times that you're seeing in front of you from the men and women of the agency. Again, talking about prevention is not measurable, a lesson that I learned over the years. And engaging the school community and administration is our priority. But as I said prior, the responsibility for any critical incident in a community is not only the police department, but frankly, it's our regional collaboration. And if you are not aware of it, under the leadership of Sheriff Danos and the other police leaders, there's 11 of us in Pima County, we've put together a regional response to any sort of critical incident involving our schools, because it's critically important that we all have the same exact response. So if there's an incident in Marana, we will be able to help Marana the same way and trained exactly the same. So as of even 2 weeks ago, we met with all of the local school district superintendents so that they are part of this discussion as well. We're continuously working on this, and I would say that at this time, we may be the first in the state of Arizona and maybe the nation that is actually putting these different resources together so that we all are able to share our resources and respond appropriately to any critical incidents that might occur. So I wanted to touch base with that. I was asked to give you an estimate, a cost for a police officer. We went specifically with the school resource officers. So an average police officer, you're going to say that isn't the recent pay raise that we got. That was the pay and the employee-related expenses that go with that. So that's going to be the retirements, medical costs, things like that. The vehicles seem to keep rising in cost. So you'll also notice that in the budget coming up. But on average, our police vehicles are running about $87,000. Equipment overall that we have to provide for a police officer that you see us carrying every day, equipment in the schools. And then overall training, we just took an estimate. We do provide some extra training for our school resource officers. So this was just kind of like a guide, the best I could give you, a little bit on the higher end, but that was the best cost estimate that I could provide to you. And I think those were the main overall comments I wanted to make, and an overview very quickly of the school resource officer program. And then I will be happy to answer any questions Councilmember Solomon or Council has for me.
Thank you, Chief. Councilmember Solomon, could you repeat the motion, please?
Oh, yes. The motion is that Oro Valley adopt the following policy. Every school in Oro Valley with an enrollment of 200 or more students shall have a school resource officer or other alternate security approved by the Oro Valley Police Chief. Oro Valley shall request a 50% reimbursement from each school for the cost of the Oro Valley provided school resource officers.
Chief Riley, if I may.
Yes, sir.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but it's my understanding that a town cannot require a school to have an SRO, but a town and any school could create an IGA and whatever that IGA looks like in terms of what the duties of the police officer will be at the school, the times they will be there, what the reimbursements for costs would be is something that could be worked out. Am I correct in that? That's my understanding.
So my understanding is that is correct. I believe we did discuss it with the Tobin Seidels on that, but I believe that the key word that Councilmember Solomon used was a policy versus a mandate or an ordinance. It's almost a recommendation.
So just as long as it's clear that it's the intent of the council to ask you to go and have these conversations with the schools and then determine what is possible, that's legal.
Yes, sir.
And that's why I phrased it the way I did, that it's just a town policy. But along those lines, my question is, would that apply to charter schools or private schools or only public schools? But once again, it's not a mandate. I think in today's day and age, we all realize that security in our schools are absolutely critical. Unfortunately, for some reason, they seem to become an attraction for individuals that want to cause quite a bit of death and mayhem. And we know that the school resource officers program, as the chief mentioned, it's not just to have a police officer on site. There's a lot more to it. It's very proactive. Many times they're teaching classes. They're interacting with the students. You've all probably seen news articles where an arrest has been made because somebody found out that someone was making a threat. And in lots of times, I know locally, it's because a student will approach the school resource officer and talk to him about it. It's also the technique where the students learn that police officers are not to be feared. They're there to help them in a variety of ways. So, it just seems like a reasonable step for us to try to make this expansion to say, let's have a policy that all our schools have these resources. I know in example, some schools actually hire their own retired officers to act as SROs. That's why that it allows, an alternate approved by the police chief.
So Councilman Solomon, I would need a little time to go research the issue with regard to public funds going either to private schools to be certain and maybe even to charter schools, but we can get that answer fairly quickly. I think that the, I'll call it resolution, or the proposal that would say, that would give the substitute to allow the school to agree to have OVPD come in and review their safety program may very well address that issue, but I will go and get you an answer to that question.
Well, I certainly know that you're underworked and was hoping to give you something to do.
Councilmember Nicholson.
What about the schools that already have SROs? Do they pay 50% right now, or would this require them to pay 50%? No,
well, no, they don't, and this doesn't require them. This says we request that they do. And I think you know, it amazes me in this day and age that a school district will say, oh, sorry, we don't have the funds for this. I mean, this is what, $5 a student per month, if something like that, if you figure out the number of students to fund. So, I mean, that's just my own personal opinion. I would think the general public would think, yes, schools, we'd like you to fund this. But it at least it gives us a basis to have a conversation with the schools to say, look, this is a town policy. We want to talk to you about this.
So, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Nicholson, the answer is we do get some funding from AMFI, but less than one police officer cost, if that helps.
Yeah, I guess my one thing is I just worry about some of the other schools already get SROs of them feeling like they need to take some of the money away from anything else to pay for it. Like, I don't mind whatever money we're giving them for SROs that keep that status quo, and then I'm pretty much fine with everything else. But
Councilmember Green, then.
The way this is worded, they could have a substitute. What, in your mind, might that substitute be, and how would he or she interact with your police force?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Dr. Green, we engage the community, our schools already, even those that don't have a school resource officer in some ancillary way already. So this would just formalize it. Sometimes other schools, as mentioned, have chosen to provide retired police officers. Some are private schools that have a lot of homeschools. So just different. But we just like to review all safety plans, responses, offer free training, anything that we can be proactive and educational with them to better serve the community.
Vice Mayor.
Thank you. So obviously for the community, this is the first time most of us are hearing mm-hmm. about this, and that's how it goes. The council meetings are live, so that's good. Chief, you know from my conversations with you that I'm always concerned about the schools and school safety, but you've talked to me about the constant evaluation process that you go through in taking a look at all of those things. Could you speak a little bit to the evaluation process that you go through and what you would bring to council if your evaluation process turned out a need or discovered a need that you evaluated?
Sure. Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, my job is to evaluate all the moving parts of the community. It's a lot that goes on. I think a lot that people don't even are aware of. So we're constantly evaluating where calls are occurring the most, if the growth of the population has occurred, if we are starting to get requests, taking a look at what that request is coming in from the community. Sometimes we get information requests from you all as well saying, hey, can you take a look at this? So we look at trends of calls, anything where we're starting to see the larger growth of population and traffic in the area, those type of topics that we just evaluate. And I've never hesitated and never will. If we are mid-year budget season and I need to come back, as I've said in the past, I won't hesitate to come back. So it's something that if it is ever moving, which it is in my industry, it's something that I'm never hesitant to address that with any member of the council. You've all been very supportive of us along the way. And so it's certainly something that I don't hesitate. But we do evaluate school population and predicted school population as well. But also it's our calls for service and normal police patrol responses that what dictates when I come to Chris Cornelison and Dave Gephardt and say, we're going to need these positions. And so it's that type of stuff that I evaluate all the time.
Okay, thanks. Mm-hmm. Because I know I had walked away from our last discussion feeling like she's really got a handle mm-hmm. on this situation. And, you know, my kids are in the schools, and so obviously that's always one of the things that we discuss, is because it's always a top of mind concern. So in terms of the asking the schools for funding, do you have any idea of how you feel like that would work or how that would go over? If we have a policy that we're going to provide an SRO, do we feel like it's realistic that the Amphi schools would agree, and the Amphi schools are the majority of the schools, that they would agree to pay for 50% of the SRO when they're currently paying less than one officer?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, it's my opinion that I have a responsibility and due diligence to constantly make sure that I am being wise with tax dollar monies. So every year since I've been your police chief, I've always talked to the school district with Amphi, because you are correct. A majority of our funds go there, go towards those school resource officers. And but you have to remember that the school resource officers also are in the other schools that are not Amphi schools. So they're all over. And so everybody seems to benefit from them, but it is something that I do address. And as we all go through financial and fiscal issues, it's something that I know Councilmember Joyce Jones-Ivey has also addressed, the mayor has addressed. So it is a topic that we are constantly discussing. But I also know it's been a commitment from the town of Oro Valley, and certainly supported by the police department, that we support the school resource officer program, and has done so for 30 plus years with town funding. So it is a balance, but it is something that I think the way I read the recommendation is from Councilmember Solomon, is that it would just be kind of informing them. We can request it, we may not get it. But you should also know that I do my due diligence in reviewing federal grants as well. Unfortunately, in consulting with our partners in the town, I don't know that we're going to be able to be applicable for this upcoming set of grants. But I also don't think that, I think there's going to be more that are coming down as we have a new leadership at the state. So it's possible.
Okay. So you're already asking for additional funding, and you aren't getting it, is more or less where it currently stands. Is that the case?
Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, we were able to get a slight increase, $25,000. But yes, we were able to, but not certainly to cover the cost.
Okay. That's good to hear. Okay. I mean, for me, I think I would need to just see a little bit more analysis and have a little bit more time. I do have some concern that it could be almost seen as reducing the support for the SROs by saying, you know, we're going to ask for 50% funding when we're currently almost 100% funding the program. So, you know, but then anyway, just taking a look at the schools as a whole. So yeah, I'd be curious to hear, a little bit more analysis on some of those things and get a chance to take a look at that. Thanks.
Sure. And I think if I could follow up with that, Mr. Mayor, Vice Mayor Barrett, on the other hand, it also provides a little bit of maybe validation to the community as a whole that we do take it seriously, and that we may, maybe if it's even so much as a review, just ensuring that that box is checked. So that's how I reviewed it. If that helps.
Yeah, I think, yeah, that makes sense. Thank you, Chief. And I know that wasn't the intention of a reduction. I'm just saying, I'm kind of hearing this the first time, trying to think, mm-hmm. what are the consequences? How would our community benefit or perceive one way or the other? So,
and Chief, as I understand it, any change in the current program, you would be coming back to council with an IGA of some sort, correct?
Yes, of course.
So, Mr. Rothschild, based on the motion that's on the floor, what I understood is that you need some time to review and come back to the council.
My phone computer tells me that we can probably not do this with private schools, but that we can do it with charter schools. So, I mean, we're okay with that understanding, but it's still the same idea that I think the chief needs to go have her conversations with the school superintendents or the various principals and come back to you with a report of what you may want to do. That'd be the motion.
Councilmember Green.
Just a clarification, Jonathan. It's okay for her to have a dialogue, though, with any type of school. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And I think, now this I might have to still go look, but we have time. If that second part of the motion, which is, we'd just like to review what you do to make recommendations to you for safety, I got to give that just a little thought, but I think you're much closer there on private schools. So it's just the money part for the private
school. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor?
Councilmember Solomon.
Does it sound like this is something we may want to table to the next meeting? So the town attorney or police, that's what it seems to be sounding. So I'm not sure of the order. Should I amend my motion or I don't recall?
Well, we can continue it to the next meeting, at which time we can provide a council report and you'll have more detail.
Yeah, I think that.
All right. Well, how do we proceed? There's a motion on the floor. So do I now change the motion to or just move to continue it?
Yeah, move to continue it to the next meeting.
We just withhold the vote, right?
Just move to continue the motion till the next okay. Move to continue the matter until the next meeting.
Mr. Mayor.
I
move to continue the matter till the next council meeting.
Second. So discussion. I just to be clear, our chief is meeting with the schools in our community on a regular basis. This isn't giving the chief permission to go out, and this is something that she has been doing since becoming our chief, and previous chiefs, I'm sure, have been communicating with the school. So,
yes, Mr. Mayor, just to clarify the direction, specifically with schools that are 200 children or more is what you would ask. Yeah, so that would be absolutely true. We do on a regular basis, and so I can absolutely engage them and get their perspective.
Mr. Mayor, again, this is try to formalize this. We know that she's been doing this. We know we've always over the last 30 years says we support this. We fund it. But I was looking to try to go a step further to say now, no, this is the town's policy. Once again, it's not a mandate because I know we can't legally do that, but our policy is that this is how we value our students, and we know that this provides an enormous benefit and increase in safety to them. So we want this to be the official policy of the council. And the chief, of course, can say now, well, yeah, this is the town's policy. That's my thought process.
Councilmember Nicholson.
I agree with everything with Steve. I would like to see it for any new SROs that we add. Like the school's already getting SROs. I hate to change any type of financial policy with them, but now they may not have as much money. But
no, it's not changing a financial policy. It's just simply making a request. So there's no change in financial policy. I want to be clear about that. And
obviously, we don't want to do anything that would reduce. The intent here is to increase, not reduce. Yeah.
Councilmember Bowen, did you?
Yes, I'd like to ask Chief Riley a question. We have a motion on the floor that involves continuing this for 2 weeks. Is 2 weeks sufficient for you to be ready to come back to us, or should we continue it to a point at which you're ready to come back and talk to us about this?
Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen, I appreciate the opportunity. As the mayor said, I'm very well versed with the principals and superintendents already, so I think I can get it done. If there's some reason I need an extension, I'll certainly let you know, but I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Vice Mayor. Okay. All in favor to continue, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Thank you, Chief. We really appreciate your service. Yep. Future agenda items, Councilmember Bowen.
Yes, I move to have an upcoming study session to to explore the greatly increasing costs of asphalt and other road materials in the local market.
I'm not hearing a second. I move to adjourn.
Seconded.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed, nay. The ayes have it, 7-0. Thank you, everyone, for your work tonight. Thank you, staff. Good night.